I'm speaking in an accent that is beyond your range of hearing. G'day, incomparable listeners. Jason has been very kind and allowed me to record a listener's commentary for this episode. I'll be chiming in with my thoughts every now and again, but otherwise the episode will play as normal. I hope you enjoy this listener's commentary.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Incomparable Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Snell. It's time for us to take another trip into the world of video games, and I've got an excellent panel here to talk about a couple of games that we've been claiming we were going to talk about for, I don't know, a couple of years now, and we finally got around to it. So this is not on the cutting edge of gaming, but it is a couple of old favorites that people kept asking, when are you going to talk about Portal and Portal 2? And the answer is now. Right now, you are. So, if you're just tuning in randomly to this podcast, hoping in vain that finally we might cover Portal, you are a really lucky person and haven't read your podcast app, because this is our Portal episode. Let me introduce my panel, who's going to talk about Portal with me. Standing in the blue Portal, Tony Sindelar. Hello.
Hello. I think we can put our differences behind us for science. You monster.
I appreciate that. Standing in the orange Portal. Oh, that's like the backside of Tony. Step out of the way, Tony. It's John Siracusa. Hello.
Jason, the only thing you've managed to break so far is my heart.
Oh. We have returning. This is like a little Last of Us episode reunion. Standing on the orange gel, it's Tiffany Arment. Hello.
Hi, I am beyond excited. You have no idea. Well, maybe Twitter has an idea.
Yeah, you've been going at it. It's very exciting.
I like this game. Like, I like Star Wars. Like, people like Star Wars.
Oh, awesome.
So I'm
awesome.
Pretty excited.
And bouncing up and down on the blue gel, it's Brianna Wu. Hello.
What's crack-a-lackin'?
Portals.
I had a whole Portal quote ready, but these two guys stole it. Like, so I'm just
you got like a built-in.
Tony took the obvious one. Yeah. I took obscure. I was nice.
I'm glad nobody said the cake is a lie.
That's a little too.
It's getting old.
I thought we could go this whole podcast without saying that, but Jason blows it immediately.
Got to do it.
Yeah, that's.
I got to get out of the way. You got to clear it. Just clear the room, and then now it's done.
Everybody gets Phil Hartman.
Yep, exactly.
I have a theory of comedy.
Yeah, you need an agent of chaos. Anyway, Portal and Portal 2. I guess we should start with Portal. not Portal 2, right?
Bold choice, Jason.
You think we should start chronologically? People are going to back me up on this one? Oh.
Do not look into the operational end of the device.
So I first discovered these games completely backward, in the sense of I had not heard of this game until Andy Iannotko put Still Alive on his holiday playlist, which is not holiday themed.
What year was this, Jason?
2008, 2009, something like that.
Not that bad then.
No, but I didn't play the game for another couple of years, probably. I don't know. I played this game. It's been a while. I didn't play this last week or anything. And you, who are all much better at games than I am, correct me, but it sounds like this was a small part of a game package, and it's not that long a game, the original Portal, but it became a phenomenon, because then I kept on hearing people talk about Portal, and then I had to play it. So it seems like, was this kind of an accidental hit, that it was meant to just be this little side thing?
So the original version of it, for those who aren't familiar, was packaged with this thing called the Orange Box, which was Valve's collection of Half-Life 2 and some Half-Life 2 expansions that never got finished, and the new version of Team Fortress. And then they had this Portal game that was kind of tucked on there, and it was sold as the Orange Box for the last generation of consoles. And it was kind of tacked on there, and I it seems like probably they were not prepared for it to be as huge a success. I mean, I think everything Valve makes is pretty good, and they have a pretty consistent hit delivery system, but yeah, Portal kind of really took off. It was really exciting. I remember playing it on a friend's Xbox 360 in a dark time before I had an Xbox 360, and I had one of those friends who was like, "You need to play this game. Come to my house and play it in one sitting." And I did that, and then I went and bought an Xbox 360 and my own copy of Portal not that long after that.
You played it on the console? I always thought it came out for the PC first, and I didn't.
Came out for the console first, sir.
Console first? Like the Orange Box did?
Yep, look it up. The Wikipedia page says they both came out the same time, Windows and Xbox.
But I think it was not.
I looked it up.
Available as its own standalone thing until later. So, yeah.
I would recommend not playing this on a console. Like any first person shooter,
I would probably buy it. I would probably buy it via Steam right now is how I would do it. If you have a Mac or a Windows computer or a Linux computer, you could just do that if you don't own a console.
All right, we should establish what devices we played this on then. I played both of them on my Mac. That's what I did. I didn't use a console for either of them.
I also did Mac for both and all.
I played it on everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You win. Yeah. You beat us. Everything.
Oh, I'm not trying to win. I'm just saying, like,
but and yet you did.
Like, people have complained about like the controls on console. And I've been like, okay, well, let's evaluate this. So I've beaten. You know, it's not a long game. Like, it's an afternoon. Yeah. You know, so I've beaten them on console and also PC.
I've played both Portal and Portal 2 on the Mac, PC, and Xbox 360. I first played Portal on the Mac when Steam launched on OS X. I later bought the Xbox 360 version, and thanks to magic of Steam Play, I also have it on my gaming PC. I played Portal 2 on my Xbox 360 while holidaying at my grandparents' place, as they had a HD TV, and we still had CRTs at home. Playing on my grandparents' TV meant that I had to wait for everyone else to have their turn on the TV before I could play, which usually meant I was starting at sometime after 11 p.m. and playing till some stupid hour in the morning. I finished Portal 2 in 3 play sessions. Most recently, I've finished it in a 1 5.5-hour play session. Regarding console controls versus keyboard and mouse, I think Portal plays just fine on with a controller or a keyboard or mouse. Which you think is better depends on what you're familiar with. I don't think someone like Jason would have found Portal to be as enjoyable if he was playing on a controller. Then again, as Tony is about to say, Portal is a very forgiving game, and I think it is a good it is good for introducing people to first-person games. Portal is a much slower-paced game. It's not the run-and-gun of Call of Duty, so new players have plenty of opportunity to familiarize themselves with navigating the world.
I played it on the 360. I've played a lot of first-person shooters on the 360. Right. I don't really have any trouble with the controls.
See, for me, the first-person shooters that I've always played, when I started playing them, were on the Mac, like Marathon 2, the whole Marathon series, and Unreal Tournament, and some other stuff like that. And so when Portal came out, and then many years later, I bought it. I wanted to play it on the Mac because I felt like I actually had the muscle memory from that, and I struggle with first-person shooters on consoles because I learned how to play them on a keyboard and pointing device. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great nostalgia trip for me because that all immediately snapped back. The whole, you know, WASD move kind of thing. Man, that was great. So on one level, Portal was just a wonderful just hit of nostalgia because I hadn't played a first-person game on my Mac in a long time, and not that many on consoles at that point.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also, as far as a first person goes, it's pretty forgiving, right? I mean, there's obviously there's some stuff that's timing involved, but not a lot, and it's not a lot of that kind of twitch reaction. It's not like playing Counter-Strike or something like that, where it's all about the milliseconds of clicking or anything like that. It's pretty forgiving.
Yeah, in fact, if you overthink it, as I did when I was playing it, for a lot of the sections where you're flipping through portals and you're doing lots of momentum moves, if you mm-hmm. just don't touch the mouse, it will realign your viewpoint based on the current new gravity. But if you're a first-person shooter player, you don't expect your viewpoint, or especially on a PC, you don't expect your viewpoint to ever be realigned unless you move the mouse. So the first time I played one of the boards in Portal 1 with the big platforms, I was constantly, as soon as I came out of a portal, I was readjusting my view to be facing the right direction. And at the same time, the game was trying to readjust my view.
Yeah.
And it was like, why is this so hard? Until I just said, oh, just don't touch the mouse. And it just realigns you to the new gravity and you're fine. And yeah, it's very easy to overthink it.
Even after playing through Portal multiple times, I really only shook the habit of trying to reorient myself on the latest playthrough. The problem I'd have is, well, take Chest Chamber 18 in Portal. The last stage of the test chamber involves platforming with portals. You fall into a pit and then you have to portal up to increasingly higher platforms. I love this section, but it always frustrated me until I worked out that I didn't have to reorient myself after passing through the portal. Before working this out, I would line up the next shot, pass through the blue portal, attempt to line up the shot again, and then pass through the orange portal. And then I'd find myself in an endless cycle of just trying to line up shots. The trick is to not touch the mouse or the right analog stick. You can line up the shot, pass through the blue portal, pass back through the orange portal, and still be lined up for the shot. It's much easier this way.
Even I did that, because I remember that that was the case with something like Marathon. You would have to reorient, and I would go through a portal and be like, wait a second. If I do nothing, I'm looking in the right direction.
It's the bar is low, but there is still a bar, because as I've tried to get other people to play this game, I thought, oh, this is a great game. You can play it in like an hour or two, Portal 1, that is. And it's fun, and it's got a narrative, and it's very interesting, and we'll talk about all the good qualities. So I'd say, you may not be a gamer, but try this game. And then just to watch people utterly fail to orient themselves in a first-person shooter, because even though it seems natural for us, it is a fairly alien concept. No matter what, maybe it's probably easier on the console, but I think even then, people just look at the screen and a bunch of thumbsticks or look at the screen and a mouse and a keyboard, and you just don't understand how to navigate that world. And that's a real big barrier to enjoying this game, because you do need some basic ability to conceptualize the space and move through it.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who's watched somebody try to play a first-person shooter for the first time, maybe whether it's a child or that person's parent or something like that, there's not a kind of natural take to it. I mean, I think we kind of take for granted, if you kind of grew up on it, that there's, you don't just instantly jump in and are able to navigate a 3D world with, WASD and a mouse, right?
Right.
That's a learned skill.
There's a YouTube video out there of I'll include a link in the show notes. It's of a father playing Portal for the first time, and watching it is just excruciating on so many levels. The dad doesn't seem to be having any trouble navigating the 3D space. He seems to have that fairly well down pat. What he's struggling with is the logic of portals, and he is stuck on the second test chamber, which is what Tony will talk about later in the episode, being stuck there for quite some time because you need to cross a gap. So you fire a blue portal, you come out of the orange portal, and then you need to fire another portal. The thing that he didn't grasp is that you just because you fired one portal doesn't mean that now that's all the portals, you've used them all. You can still fire another one. And the really agonizing thing is that he doesn't look back at the orange portal. He's looking everywhere but the orange portal. So the other thing that makes this just a horrible thing to watch is the kids are not helping him in the slightest. So he is just stumbling through this game, he's just not getting it at all, and the kids are laughing at him. So if you are giving this game to someone as their first game, be nice. Make sure you be helpful. Help them through the game if they're stuck on something. Don't hold their hand the whole time, but make sure that you are giving them helpful advice so that they can progress through the game and actually enjoy their experience. Because watching this dad play Portal, I don't think he's having any fun at all. He's just absolutely despairing at the experience. He's at one point he's just sitting there and turning to the camera. He just says, "It's impossible. It just can't be done. It's impossible."
Yeah.
For me, Portal was kind of an easy transition on the Mac from playing Half-Life. I mean, because it was just all there, and it was exactly the same. Like the controls are all the same, and the world's extremely similar. And so that for me, it was kind of, it just, that's how it happened. I can't even imagine playing it on a console. I can't.
I have to say, I was really impressed by how much better the console controls were between Portal 1 and Portal 2. You can tell they took a lot of time, particularly with the momentum puzzle algorithm. And I have to say, like, I thought, I understand where people are coming from with it being wonky on for Portal 1, but I thought Portal 2, I played it on console and just enjoyed it greatly. And honestly, like, Portal is such an easy game to begin with. I didn't think it was that hard even on, you know, 360 or, you know, where I played it.
Yeah, I try to explain this to people. I think you're right that there's this fundamental literacy about first-person shooters and moving in a 3D world and using abstract controls to control your perspective, and that we can take for granted as being something that of course it's a shooter, it's fine, it makes sense. Beyond that, though, one of the things I really like about it is, as somebody who's not, you know, like I struggled with The Last of Us, it is easier. This is true, but I also love that it was, as people always say, the first-person puzzler. I love that it used the skills I had built up, such as they were, the literacy of first-person shooters to solve puzzles.
I'm really interested.
Go ahead, Tony.
I'm really interested in, like, how games teach things, and Portal does a great job of teaching you how to play Portal. Right? It builds really incrementally. The puzzles are all really nicely designed, and, you know, they're not too hard, and you still get that kind of satisfying aha moment. But it does a really good job, especially, I think Portal 2 does an even better job of things unfold, and they keep adding new mechanics to Portal 2 all throughout Portal 2. And there's so many games where it's like the mechanics are front loaded, right? We're going to teach you everything you need to know how to play the game in the first 2 hours, and then you're going to do that over and over again for 6 to 10 more hours.
Right.
Portal 2 keeps adding to that. It keeps teaching you new things and new ways that things are going to intersect. And it does it in a way that's, you know, really fun to play.
If you haven't done so already, I highly recommend checking out the developer commentaries for Portal and Portal 2. You can find them within the game. If you enable the mode, there will be floating speech bubbles within the game. So as you play along, one of the developers or someone else who worked on the game will talk to you for a few moments about that particular part of the game. And one of the things that you learn throughout the developer commentary is just how much effort that they put into playtesting. Every single level was playtested, and they were always, you know, making sure that, you know, that they were looking for where people were getting stuck. They were making sure that people were grasping the concepts, and they quite often would find that they would need to reintroduce a concept because people might have forgotten it in between test chambers. So, I really think that Valve did a great job of playtesting Portal and making sure that, you know, people can play, get through the game and successfully. One of the other things that I really like about Portal and Portal 2 is that everything you learn during the game is used in the final boss battles. So with Portal, you're having to use the portals to redirect the missiles into GLaDOS. And when the corrupt cores come off of her, you then need to use the momentum physics to fling yourself at the cores, grab them so that you can then incinerate them. In Portal 2, you're using portals to redirect, this time bombs, at Wheatley. And then you need to use the gels to grab the corrupt cores so that you can put them back onto Wheatley. I kind of like the, it's like what George Lucas would say. It's like poetry, it rhymes. That you're doing a similar to thing in the second game to what you were doing in the first thing, but this time you're doing the reverse. You're, instead of taking the cores and incinerating them, you're grabbing the cores and then you're putting them onto Wheatley to make him more corrupt. I really love the way that you know everything that you've learned during the games is used at the end. I think it's a fantastic piece of game design.
It's a little bit like school, though, because if you miss a lesson, again, having watched people and tried to get people to play this game and appreciate it, if you miss a lesson, like if you're absent a day or you don't pay attention, because Portal 1 teaches a particular concept. And if you either never really get that concept and just fumble through the level or forget that concept, you can be just sitting there and stuck, not on the navigating the 3D world, but like that's the other aspect of this game. Like, so the 3D world is one thing. If you're good at first-person shooters, you have no problem with it. The second aspect of this game is do you have any aptitude for or enthusiasm for puzzles? And figuring out how to do the puzzles relies on you remembering the very simple, you know, steps that are laid out before. This is how portals work. They don't even give you the second portal for a while. This is how the second portal works. This is how momentum works in portals. Here's a few strategies you can do. And then they throw elements into this. This is how the buttons work. This is how the turrets work, you know, all through the thing. Like Tony said, Portal 2 just has a million of those throughout the whole game. But even in Portal 1, if you forget a single one of those in like the first couple levels, it can be like that adventure game where you just, back in the old days, where you'd spend months stuck like in a room on an adventure game because there was no internet and you couldn't figure it out. And when you did, you just felt like a dunce. I don't think that'll happen to anybody who's remotely good at puzzles, but a surprising number of people who are good at first-person shooters have no interest in puzzles whatsoever.
Right.
And I think this game is a weird mix of
Hello?
Yeah.
Are you guys here?
I just heard Tony for a minute.
Did Tony disappear?
Tony vanished.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Oh, I heard John cut out.
R.I.P. Tony.
I heard John cut out in the middle of the sentence.
Oh, no. We got John. Go ahead, Tony.
Oh, sorry. I mean, there are some very specific type of puzzle in that there are all these kind of spatial reasoning puzzles, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think a lot of people who are familiar with first-person shooters build up some spatial reasoning abilities and their ability to kind of navigate 3D space. But, you know, there's some people who that's going to probably not really resonate with and they're not going to enjoy that.
Well, the big conceptual hurdle is the fact that you have a portal gun and... That is, although they, I mean, you would think that like that is the most obvious thing about the game. Like they hammer it. It's kind of like it's in the name. It's the main mechanic of the game. And yet I will see people looking at a puzzle and not being able to figure out how to get from point A to point B. And it's like, you have a portal gun. Like once you learn which walls you can put it on and which walls you can't, it's like if you can see it at this line of sight, you can get there. How can you get there?
I remember.
Portal
there.
And
I will
then
never
like they'll be stuck for an hour on it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, even after playing the game a second time, I have definitely come into those rooms where I was like, oh, crap, how am I supposed to do this? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a minute, I have a portal. Like, you know, you forget for a second in certain levels that you have the ability to do that, even though that's like the basis of the game.
But I have a magic thing that goes against the laws of physics.
Yeah,
because
you're like, oh, okay, I'm in this room. I'm going to solve this puzzle. It's getting complicated now, especially later in the game. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, right, I could just do this and back up in here and then it's done. And that was the easiest thing ever. And I just thought about it too much. So if you like, just like John said earlier, if you think about it too much, it's over. You know, you get trapped.
What I find with Portal and Portal 2 is it's especially true in some of the longer test chambers. Because I've already played the game before, what I'll do is I'll come into a test chamber and I will have forgotten the solution to the puzzle. So instead of trying to work out the solution to the puzzle from scratch, what I'm instead doing is I'm trying to remember the solution to the puzzle, which I find is much harder because I end up sitting in the room just looking around going, I know that I basically have to get this thing over to there, but how, I can't remember. So I'll end up standing there for quite some time just racking my brains trying to remember the solution instead of working out the solution fresh, which I think I'll probably get through some of these longer sections a lot quicker if I treated them as if I was coming to the puzzle fresh rather than trying to remember what the solution was.
I'll never forget when I kind of, you know, like stumped for like 30 seconds on like the second puzzle in Portal 1. And it's like, you can shoot one portal and I see the portal far away and I shoot a portal next to me to get there. And now it's like, well, I'm already next to the fixed portal. I'm stuck, right? And it's like, wait. Oh, I can shoot another portal further away and then step back into the portal. I just get, and then, you know, everything just builds from that so seamlessly. Right. It's great.
It's also really nice how even on a second playthrough or even a third playthrough for some people, it is still, you can still make challenges for yourself, even if you've already solved the puzzles and you kind of know the basic physics of everything and how everything works and how the puzzles are worked. But you can kind of challenge yourself to be like, okay, how few steps can I take? How few portals can I throw? It makes it really, it makes it fun again.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brianna.
Oh, so I was going to say, I feel like we're kind of missing the forest for trees a little bit in this discussion. I mean, you know, Portal is a breath of fresh air in an industry that is almost completely lacking in innovation at times. And, you know, this comes from Half-Life, which is a game that, you know, is a first-person shooter, but has just enough of a twist on it to make it an interesting and significant game. You know, like the physics mods for Half-Life 2 are actually some of the most important mechanics that have ever been introduced into the game industry. And I think that, you know, like, the reason people are really passionate about Portal is it was this amazing mix of an innovative, different mechanic that is just unlike anything in any game that's ever come before. It's not a game that's about mindlessly destroying things,
yep,
which practically every game in this industry is about, yep, including my own. And, you know, and it also has this wicked sense of humor. And we're living in this industry where, you know, we just kind of all nod and wink at the lie. You know, like, we're all drowning in BS all day long, and we know it. And we hear it in commercials and, you know, in the systems of authority around us. And we're just living in, like, a very insincere society. And here's a game that comes along and does this wickedly brilliant satire about it. And it was just such a fresh experience. And I think it's like, like, we don't love Portal because, like, the PC controls are better than the console. Like, we love it because it's so innovative.
Well, you know, I'll be honest, one of the reasons why I am not attracted to a lot of the games that come out, and I do have many consoles, and I do like games, but, like, and this is how I felt a little bit about The Last of Us. It's like, I get bored with shooting bullets at stuff, especially if it's people like stuff. Like, my favorite things in Halo are like driving the vehicles around and all that. And there's we're really talking about both games anyway. There is a point in Portal 2 where I've got a gun in this game, but I create with it. I don't destroy with it. And I use my intelligence and I get away from that firing bullets and having the splash of a dead body of an alien hitting the floor or some other kind of enemy. But then late in Portal 2, there are several levels where you're basically painting, the level, the 3D level. You've opened portals on drips of goo and then open them up somewhere else, and they're kind of shooting out and just kind of splashing everywhere, and you're doing it tactically, and yet I find myself really enjoying just the effort of painting these beautiful 3D levels with these drops of goo just for fun, just because it was enjoyable.
Even after playing through Portal 2 multiple times, I still find that I really enjoy just painting chest chambers with the conversion gel. And when you get it for the first time, you know, I really didn't know what you were supposed to do in that chest chamber, so it's just paint everything. But even now, like, I could work out which is the best place to put the portals so that, you know, I can get through it quickly. But no, it's still, even after I played the game so many times, it's just paint the room. It's going to be fun, and then we'll work out how to get out of here once everything is painted. Only once everything is painted, then we can leave.
And
try Super Mario Sunshine, you might like it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm totally with you there that I totally get the first-person shooter metaphor, and I've enjoyed playing shooters. And yet, you know, as I've gotten older, it just seems kind of old to me. And Portal was that breath of fresh air of, like, oh, I can use these skills and have a good time. And yeah, there's some peril and there's some things shooting at me, but it's not, I'm just outwitting them. And I really appreciate it. That's the thing that made me play. There are not that many games that I have played, you know, all the way through, in the last 10 years, and the Portal games were not hard to play all the way through. Like, I really wanted to play them all the way through.
I like how in Portal 2, you're constantly berated for being a murderer, even though it's, you know, a relatively non-violent game compared to the number of murders you would commit in many other games, right?
In addition to, like, what Brianna was saying about how it being this just wickedly brilliant satire, were her exact words, since the chat room loves it as a title.
Sure.
But just the way that, even in Portal 1, to start, the way the story came in to play, and how everyone was saying, you guys were saying that it teaches you how to play the game very well without feeling like it's teaching you how to play the game. But it also kind of brings in the story you realizing that there's a story coming. You know, all of a sudden, Gladys is, you know, you hear her voice, you don't know anything about her, but she'll start, you know, saying things about like, oh, you're going to be missed, you know, and you're like, wait, what did she just say? You know, and you're like, hold on a second. And then the music changes and it starts, you know, feeling a little bit ominous. And you're like, what am I walking into here? You know, at first you feel like it's just this puzzle game and you're playing as this person and you're walking through and I'm going to solve some puzzles with this cool gun. But then it very seamlessly and slowly becomes, you know, this intense thing that and then you start finding the dens and you start seeing what's going on and she starts talking to you in a weird way. And I find that so intriguing. And like it's so funny, and the wit that they use and the language that's used, you just can't help but enjoy it and keep going, but also have a little
Can
bit
I
of fear,
something?
Which
oh,
is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I played Portal for the first time, I really came into it knowing absolutely nothing about the game. I watched one of the trailers beforehand, and in the trailer you see Chell falling through portals, and you know there's two portals right next to each other, and she's running through them and you know, chasing herself. What the impression that I got from the trailer was that at some point in the game you're going to have to chase someone. So when I found the Ratman dens, I'm thinking, oh, this is the story of Portal. We're in this test chamber, we're in this testing facility, and we're going through it. There's someone else who has come through before us. They got horribly stuck, and you know, rather than you know help him get through the test chambers, the scientists just left him to his own devices. And he's gone insane being stuck in these rooms, not having any idea of how to get out. So he's been pulling out the panels, he's been scribbling on the walls, he's been in there for weeks, and eventually, you know, he moves on to the next test chamber and, you know, he does get out eventually. So what I thought the story of Portal was going to be is that you, after coming across these test chambers, the dens in the test chambers, and finding that this man slowly going crazy in here, I thought I would have to chase him through the facility. That's what I thought the ending of Portal was going to be. So it was quite a shock when I found out that, oh no, it's actually the computer is trying to kill me and the crazy man is trying to help me escape so that I can kill the computer. There's one other thing worth mentioning about the Ratman dens in Portal 2. When you find the blue portal gun for the first time and you can see the murals that have been painted by Ratman depicting the events of Portal 1, if you looked directly up where the portal gun was left, you will see a moon motif depicting the phases of the moon on the ceiling. It's a nice little nod to the end of the game, and that you can find paintings of the moon done by Ratman in his various other dens.
I was just gonna say, like, the way they tell that story is so brilliant, because like you were talking about her voice and like for the first part of the game, if you listen to the way that they edited Gladys's voice, they would have her like read three lines and they would pull individual words out of it and make it sound very disjointed and computer-like. And if you listen to that effect, as you go deeper and deeper into the game, they start rolling that back and taking it away.
I'm just going to play a clip from the Portal developer commentary explaining the process behind creating Gladys's voice. It's a fascinating listen.
Creating the AI voice was a multi-step process. First, we ran every line of dialogue through an automatic text-to-speech program. In the studio, we cued the actress who plays Gladys, Ellen McLean, with the computer-generated sound file. She'd mimic it, and then over the course of several takes, adjust her performance to clean up any words that were unintelligible in the computer version. For instance, here's a line as Ellen delivered it.
Perfect. Please move quickly to the chamber lock. as the effects of prolonged exposure to the button are not part of this test.
Once the recording was done, we processed all the dialogue to give it an extra computery edge. Here's that same line as it appears in the game, with the pitch constrained, pitch modulation suppressed, and the formant moved up.
Perfect. Please move quickly to the chamber lock, as the effects of prolonged exposure to the button are not part of this test.
So what you have, like when, like you were talking about with the sinisterness, like start coming out, then they would not do that effect, and she'd be, so it was lessened and lessened and lessened. So she becomes more and more human.
Yeah.
And more and more of a villain until you get to like the final level where she's doing actual evil soliloquies towards you. And it's just so awesome. I mean, we all agree that GLaDOS is one of the greatest villains in any video game, right?
It's like, such a great character.
Right.
Bree already stole the first two lines from my notes. She got the clever gameplay mechanic mixed with narrative, which was my overarching thing. And then my very first note was the super robotic voice at the beginning of Portal 1 that slowly gives away. You really see it if you go play Portal 1 and Portal 2 back-to-back, because Portal 2, she's all smooth, silky, evil the whole time, right? Whereas Portal 1, you know, the game Portals is from basically like an idea for a gameplay mechanic, this whole Portals mechanic. Yeah. And you can make a game with just a mechanic. What makes it special is they had a mechanic. Lots of games have cool mechanics. I mean, you could say even something like Threes has an interesting mechanic that, you know, we could combine these tiles and they slide in an interesting way. That's a mechanic. You can make a great game like that, but putting narrative on top of it is, you know, it's like chocolate and peanut butter combined here. And it's not like if you just have a narrative, you have a bad game. And it's not like if you just have a great gameplay, you kind of give a bad game. You make great games either way. But Portal was such an oddity because it was like, look, you know, it was made by a few people. It was a small, tie-in type game. It's never going to be this grand narrative, like a big, huge AAA narrative game. And it's never, the gameplay mechanic is like, yeah, all right, I guess it's kind of interesting. But the combination of the two is way more than the sum of the parts.
Well, and, I think also what kind of game it is plays into it brilliantly in that the way it starts, you know, you almost expect, it's like, oh, I get it. They've got a clever mechanic. And they've got a series of puzzles, and it's literally going to be. I mean, and you were led to believe.
That's what everybody thought,
right?
When they said,
you got
like,
the labels
we're
on the wall. This is one of 16, right? And you're like, oh yeah, I guess we're just going to do some things. And then you get to that moment where it all falls apart, and you flee, and you're going down the passageways outside the things, and that is one of my favorite moments in any game I've ever played, because you're like, what is happening now? How you know? And I've got
and
a portal
flee,
gun.
You feel that fleeing adrenaline.
Oh yeah,
you
it's trying to kill
it.
Me.
You're
I
like,
get
oh
out
my
of
god,
here.
I really do have to get out of here. Like,
and even at that point, you know that she's probably going to kill you at that point. Like, this is the great thing about, you know, sort of the mute protagonist in Half-Life and in this game as well.
I know that GLaDOS is the villain of Portal, but I have a very hard time thinking of her as the villain of Portal. I think I just like her too much, and I've certainly never hated her, even when she's absolutely berating me. I just find what she says to be too funny for me to ever hate GLaDOS. I just like her too much, so I can't hate her. I can't think of her as the villain.
By the time you get up to whatever that level is, when the fire is there and everything, and they're going to incinerate you, you are so mad at GLaDOS because she's just been needling you. And the only way you have to take revenge on this voice that's been in your ear that you're pretty sure now wants you dead is through your actions in the game, because you can't yell back, and there's no, like, there's no interaction, there's no dialogue. It's like you feel like you're in this conflict with what is essentially a voiceover. Like, again, if it's a small game, an economical way to do it is just make the game with the mechanic and just add a voiceover. You're like, what do you mean just add it? Is that it? Is that your whole narrative? Is it just going to be voiceover? How the heck are you going to pull that off? It's very economical, and the trick is have really, really good writing and really, really good voice acting, and then all of a sudden there's this entire world and this entire conflict that's in your head with what is essentially a voice happening while you play puzzles. Like, her voice, she doesn't even affect the game. She just drops you in, and then you play out each room, and
talks to you in the elevator.
Right, and, you know, during the loading screen.
She insults you in the elevator.
Out of that, this entire, it's like reading a book. This entire world has spun out in your mind. Like, the entire game is taking place in your mind while, like, your hands are solving a puzzle, and you're just like, I'm going to get her or whatever, you know. She thinks she's going to kill you, and you're like, escape, haha, I'm free, you know.
Yeah, I usually find games with the silent protagonist like kind of frustrating and feel like it's kind of from a certain era of video games, but it works so well in this. I mean, to me, it's weird in Half-Life when you go places and there are like scientists talking to you and you just sit there and don't respond.
Generally speaking, I find that I enjoy games with silent protagonists more than protagonists that are speaking as you play. You know, I really like Half-Life and Halo. The Master Chief only talks during cutscenes, so as you're playing the game, he's not rabbiting on. But yeah, I find that when you are playing as a silent protagonist, it allows for more role playing. You can sort of become the character as you're playing the game, and your reactions to what is going on can be enhanced because you are thinking as that character. You know, one of the things that I like to do from time to time in Half-Life is that I play as if I am Gordon Freeman, and you know, the scientists are having the conversation and I'm standing there going, okay, well, in this time that I'm playing as Gordon Freeman, he's professional, he's calmly listening to the scientists, he's considering what they have to say, and then he's going to go off and act on what has just happened. But other times when you play, this time Gordon Freeman is a jerk and he's going to jump all over the furniture and break things.
But it works really well in Portal with you know, with GLaDOS as the main character and with the other characters that they add in Portal 2.
Well, it's all women. Yeah, that's true.
They even talk about, like, bring your daughter to work day, yeah, the self-esteem fun for girls, thing, like, GLaDOS,
The beginning of Portal 1, like, how do you show who the character is in a first-person shooter? And the very first, as soon as you wake up in Portal 1, you are forced to see your player character, which almost never happens in any other game unless you shove a mirror in their face, because going through the portal, you see yourself entering, you know what I mean? Like, it's a clever way to, without putting a mirror right in front of you, or without having, like, a readout over the screen saying who you are or whatever, it's totally clear that you are this woman, and for the rest of the game, you'll be seeing yourself going through portals. Yeah. You know?
I was surprised in a good way when I found out that the player character in Portal is a female. You know, I saw myself in the portal and realized that, oh, I'm playing as a female. Cool. So I think in this day and age where people are complaining loudly that you can't play as a female character in Assassin's Creed, I think Valve deserves quite a bit of praise for making Chell who she is in Portal and Portal 2, because, you know, they could have just as easily made it a male playable character. And I don't think it would have made a huge amount of difference to, well, certainly not to the gameplay, to the story, maybe, but they made it a female character, and I think that's fantastic. Ultimately, I'd like to see that, you know, the gender of the player character isn't an issue in gaming, because, you know, there's enough diversity or whatever that it just doesn't matter anymore, but, you know, and until that day comes, thumbs up Valve.
It's the well, let's see, where do we want to go from here? I like the silence. I wanted to say one thing about the silence, which is just, you can read it as being, I'm not gonna feed the trolls, right? I'm not gonna give GLaDOS the satisfaction of talking to her. I'm just gonna ignore her and roll my eyes, and she can hold a whole conversation by herself. I don't need to participate. Instead of it being that, why am I not saying anything?
And they kind of even then poke fun at it in Portal 2 when when they ask you to say stuff and you hit a button, it makes you jump, and maybe you have brain damage, you know, or maybe you just don't want to talk to any of these annoying robots.
She calls you a mute monster at some point later in Portal 2, or some kind of crazy mute or whatever, but yeah, the idea is that, like,
you dangerous mute lunatic.
Yeah, there you go. Like, you're playing the entire game, and your actions are your only revenge. And even though everything, like, you know how it works, it's a game. Like, when you get through a certain sequence, certain audio is triggered. But it seems like, especially because the amount of time you spend solving a puzzle is variable depending on whether you get stuck or not, and very often you'll spend a long period of time without hearing anything, say because you don't trigger any other events, like putting a portal behind the security cameras and hearing the little voice tell you not to do that or whatever. And you struggle through a puzzle, and in your moment of triumph, immediately her voice comes in and cuts you down again. And then you just hate her even more. And you're like, oh, God.
Even her just berating you when you're in the elevators is kind of, it's like, that's a really nice take on like, we're, this is here so we can have a loading screen, right? But we're going to, you know, we're going to amuse you, you know.
Just want to quickly mention a couple of things about the loading screens in Portal and Portal 2. I really like the loading screens in Portal. They happen really quickly. They don't interrupt gameplay for too long. And if you die while solving a test chamber by falling into the toxic sludge or getting shot by a turret, you wind up right back where you were before you made the mistake. But in Portal 2, well, the loading screens are a lot longer, especially in the Xbox 360. I remember them being excruciatingly long. When I played recently on the PC, the loading screens weren't so bad. I haven't timed the loading screens between the two. I would like to one day, just out of curiosity, but I found that they were, the loading screens when playing on my PC, it was a lot more tolerable. But still, if you die in Portal 2, you don't end up right back where you were immediately before you made the mistake. You go right back to the beginning of the test chamber, so you have to listen to all of the dialogue all over again. And if you've made a couple of mistakes in a row, just stupid mistakes, and it's, oh, now I've got to go back to where I was and I have to listen to everything all over again, and it's, I don't really like that.
In between puzzles.
So I have to say, I've heard a criticism I hear a lot from people are people that they don't like games that basically play as movies. Like they hate Metal Gear, for instance, because they don't want to watch a story. They want to play a story. And they're really big fans of like the first person, like you exist in this world and you just see it and a story happens around you. I usually don't like that, but I think in Portal, I think that this game could not have worked if you had heard Chell talking. And the reason I think that is, Jason, coming back to your comment about like, you know, how you felt when the world started, you know, like GLaDOS tries to kill you and you leap out of the incinerator and like you've broken the fourth wall and suddenly you're behind the scenes of Aperture Science. And, you know, you're seeing all these mechanics and like the just broken down scaffoldry going from room to room. And that experience is so much about what you, the player, are feeling. And like, do you remember when you incinerated your companion cube? That was freaking horrible. Like that hurt to kill your faithful companion cube.
You incinerated the
and then they twist the knife.
Do they always say that it was the fastest
ever to do it?
Yeah, do they always say that?
Always.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But it was so much about what you yourself felt from that. Like maybe you're a monster and you felt nothing incinerating your companion cube.
I'm sorry, Brianna, I am a monster. I didn't feel anything when I incinerated my companion cube. One of the reasons that the companion cube exists at all is that the designers wanted to have a chamber where you needed to carry a cube around with you to solve multiple puzzles. But what they found, if it was just the standard cube, players would immediately discard the cube after, you know, climbing up the steps, and then they'd be in the two corridors with the high energy pellet going up and down, and they'd assume that it's a run to the end before the high energy pellet gets you kind of challenge, but actually they wanted you to use the cube as a shield, so they painted the companion cube pink, put a little love heart on it, and then they had GLaDOS talk about the companion cube endlessly so that players would know that this is an important object and I need to carry it with me throughout the game. And the reason why you incinerate the companion cube is so that you, well, it's setting you up for the final boss battle so that when you see the incinerator at the back of the room, you know what to do with those cores.
And I think if you had like Chell speaking throughout the whole game, I think it would just exactly, because the wonder portal is exploring and figuring it out, and your own thoughts and your own journey in your head is the reward of Portal. So I think this is like the rare edge case. Like, it's really true, this criticism I use.
Like, I don't think there are any cutscenes in Portal 1, like, with the exception of maybe the very ending of the game. Like, there are loading screens in which you are, you know, elevated and you're entertained by voices, but you make everything happen. And so it is a it is a conversation between voiceover audio and your actions. That is the conversation. Obviously, your actions are always going to be the same. You're always going to complete each room and go to the next room, and yet it feels like a conversation, even though you are essentially being led through a linear thing of corridors and triggering a linear series of events. That's what good writing can do. It can make you forget, like, just like a book. Like, the book's going to unfold the way it's going to unfold, but you feel like it's a living, breathing thing when you're reading it.
Yeah.
Because whatever you've got in your head as the platform is, like, going out over that fire and then you're running through the back hallways, like, whatever you have in your head is going to be a lot more meaningful than, like, a voice actor saying, like, I got to get out of here, right? I mean, that...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And whatever you have in that head. Too. The music cues that they had were really, really good, really lent to everything in the game.
They freaked
in addition
out.
To, like, I love just the little radio playing the annoying song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's I do love that. My phone ring. But, you know.
You guys know about the uber secret Easter egg that they hid with that radio, right? Because I thought this was one of the most genius things ever. And, you know, just in case, like, other people don't know it. So before Portal 2 was coming out, Valve did this mystery update for Portal 1. And it was this huge file that they put in Portal 1, but the game was totally the same. And people are like, what's all the data in this patch? What's going on? So what you had to do was get that first portal, get the radio in the first room, and you had to carry it all over. And do you remember how when you would walk it around, it would, like, squawk?
According to the developer commentary in Portal, the radio is actually playing a instrumental version of Still Alive. And just a fun little bit of trivia and some more trivia. Not to turn this into an achievement hunter thing, but there is an achievement for taking one of the radios into the specific spot to receive the message. I got it on the latest playthrough just by accident. There's the it was the test chamber where you first get the blue portal gun. There is a radio up on top of one of the ledges, and I portal myself up to there. And when I grabbed the radio and took it back down to the chamber floor where the portal gun was, that's when I got the transmission. So I apparently you don't need to grab one of the earlier radios and take it around with you everywhere to get the achievement, but I'm not sure if you get the entire message by doing what I did. I haven't read up on the achievement in quite some time, so it's not like, as some of the people in the chat room they were talking about the little Rocket Man achievement in Half-Life 2 to episode 2, where you take the gnome at the very beginning of the game all the way to the end of the game and stuff him in a rocket. And that I have done that achievement. I did it with the help of a walkthrough, and even with a walkthrough, it is still really, really hard to do. Before I finish this bit up, I will give you a tip if you want to do that segment. The part where you were being chased by the helicopter, leave the gnome where it is, do that level, get chased by the helicopter, go down the train tracks. After the helicopter stops chasing you, turn around, go back, get the gnome, and then go through that part of the level. It'll be so much easier without the helicopter chasing you.
So you would go to this one area and you would be able to hear, like, this beeping noise. Like this code. And what they did was they ran it through this, I think it was a sonar program. And the sonar program, like, used by the military. And so, like, Valve had hidden this transmission in there. And they did all this stuff with, like, Aperture Science Laboratories and, like, hiding Cave Johnson and, like, the fake websites and all this stuff. And it was just freaking genius. So, like, that radio, I never look at it the same way again when I go back and play Portal 1.
They also slightly changed the cutscene at the end where you get
Oh, did they?
Yeah. You, yeah and at the end, you're just there in like the field, and you get dragged back. In the slightly updated. Yeah.
I also like, as somebody who tends to not do the obsessive exploring of every single crevice of every single 3D area of a game, I liked that in Portal, the original, when you go behind the scenes, I felt really motivated to do that, partially because the game was leading me there, but also partially because of the story. The story made me feel like, as Chell, I needed to figure out what the hell was going on here. And then you get rewarded by seeing the scrawled things on the walls and stuff like that. But I liked how it made me feel like, oh, well, of course, I need to do this thing that, you know, most gamers would probably be doing anyway, which is trying to figure out what's going on by looking down all these weird different locations behind the scenes in this game.
And they put arrows on the wall, too, like as a organic yes. way to integrate, like, this is a place where some people might get stuck. So you've been seeing scrawling on the wall already anyway. So if we put a scrawled arrow, there's a gameplay reason for there to be essentially a hint in the game reminding people who might not be sure, oh, by the way, you should go this way. Because there are places in the game, especially when you're going through the mechanicals, where, again, if your level of first-person shooter awareness is not good, you could get yourself turned around and not quite understand, especially since GLaDOS is going, you're not even going the right way, like, all the time. I can imagine people believing that, because you do get lost in that type of thing, and you've got the arrows pointing you towards to continue the game.
I wanted to talk about some of the other characters in the game, and this may not be what you expect me to say, but maybe we could talk about the turrets.
Yeah,
because they are
characters. Who doesn't love the turrets?
They are characters,
yeah. And I don't hate you.
And I find them delightful because they talk and they say very strange things. And when you they're going to shoot you, so you have to do bad things to them. And then it's very sad because they yelp and they say sad things. And
this is my favorite turret line in the entire game, and you see why when I play the clip in a moment.
Please put me down. Hello, put me down.
Well, they did ask to be put down, and I can only oblige.
I love that. I love that the turrets, and they look, you know, interesting and almost, you know, like a more like a person than a person robot.
I love coming across the special ones, and especially in Portal 2, where they have like the ones in the den that sing the little song. Did you come across that one? They're like in the background, you hear this music and you're like, what is that? And you like go through and you find one of the rat dens and you're in there, and then all of a sudden you find this area where there's 3 or 4 of them just singing a little song to themselves, like in this little warehouse, and it's adorable. And then the one that you find on the platform, right, that like tells you all kinds of...
Just going to play a clip of what the turret that you say from the turret redemption line says after you rescue it. Unfortunately, when I played through it most recently, I sent it through the Emancipation Grill just a little bit too quickly, so I missed out on some of the dialogue. I've taken this clip from YouTube.
Was punished by the gods for giving the gift of knowledge to man. He was cast into the bowels of the earth and pecked by birds. It won't be enough. The answer is beneath us. Her name is Carolyn. Remember that. That's all I can say.
What does it say? It says like all kind of life affirming, slightly religious jargon because you saved it from being incinerated. Do you remember? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Anybody?
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
The defective ones are even more bent than the regular ones.
Yeah, it's like, I'm different, save me.
Well, and I feel really bad for the Franken cubes that are the turrets that get kind of smooshed into cubes, and they're all messed up, and they're like,
they have little legs, and they try to squeeze them on the ground until you come close, and they tuck their legs in.
They're cubes. They're turrets that have been turned into cubes.
What a horrible idea.
I don't know.
Like right off the bat, in the very first level of Portal 1, they try to give the giant, whatever, the Aperture Science, whatever, giant red button.
Please place the weighted storage cube on the 1500 megawatt Aperture Science heavy duty super colliding super button.
They try to give that like a personality, which obviously the buttons don't have a personality, but by giving ridiculous Aperture Science names to each one of these things, you start to get a picture of what this company is like. They're not just about shower curtains anymore. They do all sorts of things.
Science.
Yeah.
You know, the original script for Portal 2 was going to have, it ended up being very much Wheatley, Watley. How do you pronounce his
Wheatley.
Name? Wheatley. Yeah, Wheatley. So it was like you spend a lot of time with Wheatley. But the original version of it was going to have different levels with like the space sphere and the rodeo sphere. What was the third one? I'm spacing on it.
Adventure sphere.
Adventure sphere. The food
sphere. So one of the many ideas, story ideas for Portal 2 was to have you play with multiple personality spheres throughout the game. And one of the personality spheres that they talk about in the developer commentaries is a paranoid personality sphere that has holed himself up in a section of Aperture Science, and he's got all these traps that are preventing you from getting to him. And when I hear that, how that was part of the story and is later thrown out, I do kind of wish that we did get to see the paranoid personality sphere and get to spend more time with the adventure sphere, because you really do you do miss a lot of his dialogue in the boss battle because you're so busy just trying to get the cores up onto Wheatley so that you can corrupt him. That is, both Portal and Portal 2 have really intense boss battles. I can't really think of anything, any other game where I've been more stressed while playing a boss battle.
Core, the food core? Is it the adventure
core? Remember. Fact sphere!
The fact sphere, yes.
Yeah. Oh my god! I wish they just had so much personality, like especially the space sphere. So I want a whole spinoff game with just the space sphere.
I like the adventure one because space. he was a nice match for Cave Johnson. Johnson would have got along great with the adventure core.
This is my all-time favorite space sphere line. I love it so much.
So much space, need to see it all.
All right, let's talk about Cave Johnson. And the 50s. We're getting into Portal 2 here, but it all goes together, man. I loved that whole section of the game, and we can talk about that too. How we start Portal 2, and it's pretty familiar. Although we've got Wheatley as our companion, and then we've got at the end, it's pretty familiar. Although it's kind of skewed and it's undercutting sort of what we expect, but it also is what we expect in Portal.
And they do the great thing of building that familiarity by having you play the first couple chambers from Portal again, except now they're all
messed up.
They do like three flips because you start the game and you're like, well, okay, is GLaDOS in this game or not? Because I've got this core thing, and Wheatley has enough personality that you could be like, I wouldn't be offended by playing a game with Wheatley as my companion because he's charismatic in a different way or whatever. Yeah. And then so that's one. And then they do the twist of like, oh, GLaDOS, she's still here. Big surprise. But anyway, she is. So that's number two. And then number three is, oh, you thought it was going to be another game where you're just you versus GLaDOS. Actually, this is a whole other thing, you know, and then you fall down the big shaft, and then there's the Cave Johnson, and then it all comes together. So they kind of do it. I'm not saying they do it too many times, but they do, I think, just enough twists where it's kind of like three or four games in one, and each one gives you a different look. Just when you think you're getting a little bit tired of, all right, so am I just going to go through a series of levels with Wheatley? Oh, GLaDOS is back. All right, am I just going to go through a series of levels with her? No, actually, I'm not. And Cave Johnson has his own progression, and then it all comes together in the end. It's a surprisingly rich structure for what is not a very long game. It's only long compared to Portal 2, but you can get
they find a lot of ways to reinvent that formula, right?
Yeah. So I love the Cave Johnson section. for lots of reasons. I love that it's such a change in terms of the palette and the set design and everything. And we've got and the cut the loading screens change so that, you know, you end up with the history of logos of Aperture Science through the decades, which is fantastic. That 70s Aperture Science logo is a thing of beauty and horror, but beauty. and then we get the story of Cave Johnson, played wonderfully by J.K. Simmons, and I really enjoy hearing his. It strains credulity a little bit that it's like, yes, we'll take this recording when he will occasionally have asides and bark them at people. We'll just load that one in that part. We're not going to edit it or anything, but still, it's telling his story, and it's also giving you that kind of amusing, like, oh, Aperture's been around for a while. How did it get started? What, you know, why is it the way it is now? And while you're going through the kind of decrepit, you know, the underbelly of what was Aperture back at the beginning. And I love that section. I think J.K. Simmons is a riot. And I was really happy the entire time I was playing in the retro portal section. It just was really enjoyable. That was my favorite part of the game.
For me, the middle act of Portal 2, where you're deep underground, the Aperture facility and all the 50s, 70s and 80s test chambers, it's always been the low point of the game for me, no pun intended. I think the main reason for this is that when I played the game for the first time, this would have been at the end of my first playthrough, at the end of my first play session, and it would have been ridiculously early in the morning, possibly 2 a.m. or something like that, so I'm really not thinking properly. And as I'm navigating the parts in between the test chambers, I was always getting horribly, horribly stuck because I just could not figure out how to progress to the next section. I mean, the part where you need, there's a wall that you need to get over to, and the game helpfully prompts you, press this button to zoom at this point. And the thing is that prompt doesn't come up in a very helpful location. So I was forever looking through the wall, trying to find what I was supposed to zoom in to so that I could put a portal somewhere on the other side. And what you were supposed to do was put the portal up above. So I was just going back and forth through this area, going, I've missed something, I've missed something, I've missed something. How do I get through this thing? And eventually I worked it out and moved on to the next bit. And the next part that I got stuck at is, you know, when you walk through the welcoming area and the first time that you hear Cave Junction's voice, you're supposed to set up a pair of portals so that you jump off of a scaffolding, fall down through the ground, and then come out at an angled part of wall so that you fly through the Aperture logo. I did not figure out that that's what you were supposed to do. I saw the officers up there, and I thought, well, it's obvious that you can't get up to there. Where I'm supposed to go is, I was supposed to go deeper into the facility over that fence where there's absolutely nothing. It's just fog. I'm absolutely supposed to go there. I know it. In my sleep deprived state, I knew that that was the way I was supposed to go. So I would have spent ages trying to figure out how to jump over this fence. And eventually I did work out where I was supposed to go. You go through, fly through the logo, and you keep going. What I found that every single time I got stuck and I'd been trying to work out the solution to progress for, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, I think to myself, you know, I'm really tired, I should go to sleep. But then I figure out the solution to the puzzle and I kept playing for another few hours. It really wasn't a good idea to be doing that. The other reason why I don't like this section is that when you reach the bottom of the pit and you're looking up at the pneumatic tube elevator that you just fell out of, and as you're going through the facility and you see this, it's an enormous space and you can see up for miles, and the sort of the enormity of the challenge of getting back to the modern aperture hits you, and it just feels like this overwhelming sense of dread. It's, I have to go all the way up there, but it's so far away. How am I going to do that? It's going to take forever. But thankfully, the thing that really helps me get through this section is the voiceovers by Cave Johnson. I love the things that he says. He's so funny. That really helps me get through. And there are a few other Easter eggs that liven up this section. My favorites are the posters that you can find on the walls throughout the facility. There's one showing what the handheld portal device looked like back in 1950. It was actually a giant backpack called the Aperture Science Portable Quantum Tunneling Device. And it was massive, and I can imagine that having that giant piece of equipment on your back would make these tests a lot harder. So I think we and Chell have it easy with just a handheld portal device. There's another poster that says that the repulsion gel was created as a dietetic pudding substitute, and it was later pulled from the shelves for various reasons. I wonder why. There's another poster that I really love, and I actually have it as a desktop wallpaper. I'll post a link for that in the show notes. It's, if a future you tries to warn you about this test, don't listen. There's another poster later on, accidents hurt, and then it goes through showing the various ways that accidents can hurt yourself, and it can hurt your co-workers, and it hurts the company by losing money, and you don't want the safety inspectors coming down because it hurts the progress of science. But the thing that I love most about the poster is that when it says accidents can hurt your co-workers, it shows one of the lab guys pushing someone else into a 44-gallon drum that is on fire and has a biohazard sign on it. That always cracks me up when I see it. And there are other posters later on when you get into the 70s and 80s saying that if you see the following government agents or, you know, police officers or even journalists, alert your supervisor. And there are other ones saying, you know, reminding you not to touch the glass. Cave Johnson obviously has a thing about these vagrants that he's picked up not touching the glass. And then, of course, later on, you do find the posters telling you, you know, that robots can do your job better. But if you do see a robot that is going a little bit out of control, remember these are some handy logical paradoxes that you can yell at it to disable the robot.
I think it's
every
especially
patch
kind of...
I go to, I hope I can find like some exploding lemons to buy and keep near my desk. Like, that would be awesome. I want to have my people at GSX and like throw lemons at them just to psych them out. No, that whole monologue was great. And finding out GLaDOS's backstory, I mean, it doesn't say explicitly who she is, but it sure does hint to it.
It does at the very end. It does, because at the very end she says that Carolyn has made me so. For those who just, I don't know why they're listening if they haven't played the game, but Cave Johnson's assistant, who he says in the end, he's like, she needs to run the company, and you should put her in the computer instead of me. If I die before you can put me in the computer, Caroline. At the end, GLaDOS says, opening all these memories of Caroline has really helped me understand things and get more in touch with myself emotionally. Caroline deleted. So that's a nice moment. And then, of course, in the song, in Once You Gone, it says that too. So she's always, Carolyn is always there, but it takes a while for it to dawn on you of what's happening, I think. I mean, you can read ahead maybe a little bit and figure it out, but that's a really nice thing too. As he's dying from moon dust poisoning.
There's still a few things left to wrap up, though. The bean counters told me we literally could not afford to buy $7 worth of moon rocks, much less 70 million. Bought them anyway. Ground them up, mixed them into a gel. And guess what? Ground up moon rocks are pure poison. I am deathly ill. Still, it turns out they're a great portal conductor. So now, we're going to see if jumping in and out of these new portals can somehow leach the lunar poison out of a man's bloodstream. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Let's all stay positive and do some science.
It's interesting to note that Aperture Science has become more prosperous since the death of Kay Johnson. When we saw the facility in its heyday in the 50s, you know, they were using a lot of expensive materials in their offices, and everything seemed to be going really well. They were getting Olympians and other high profile sorts of people into for their test subjects, but in the 70s and 80s, well, they're having to get homeless people in, and with the promise of $60 for doing the test chambers. And you can see that the decor has deteriorated somewhat. It's gone from marble tiles to vinyl flooring, and once Cave dies and stops doing stupid things like spending $7 million on moon rocks, Aperture's fortunes do seem to improve quite significantly.
I thought it was nice that the narrative that takes place in Portal 2, where they reveal all these things, like, it was one of the few games where I didn't have to, after completing Portal 2, go to a site and look up, like, what, you know, go to the wiki page and look up what the real story is, because I was interested enough in the game to, like, look at every little thing, because there's not too many things to look at, right? So you see the science fair, you see the potato, you see the names and stuff like that. And just through sort of the emotional arc, not so much the, like, the little hints they gave you, but just the emotional arc of the game made it very clear to me what the relationship between Carol and GLaDOS and Chell was, or at least as far as I was concerned. And then I was just looking up to see if the actual evidence on the wiki pages and all the fan sites confirmed what I in my heart believed to be true, the connection between right. them. And it either agreed with it, or at the very least didn't disprove it. So I definitely have my headcanon for this game, and I think the headcanon is probably pretty close to what the real canon is.
Yeah. Do you want to say that now?
I think if we can save it at the end, but
yeah. It's in the chat room too.
Yeah, everyone in the chat's talking about it.
What I would say about GLaDOS and Carolyn, you know, I really like that whole, you know, I like the realization, and the best part of it is that I love that all happens while GLaDOS is with you, stuck to a potato. Yeah. Because she's like, not, you know, like, oh my god, I figured out the origin of GLaDOS. It's like, no, she's right there going like, oh, that sounds familiar, I don't know. And that adds a whole other layer to it, that she, the potato GLaDOS, is you know, stuck on your portal gun while you're learning her origin story. That's amazing.
And it's retroactive continuity. Like the line I said at the opening of the show, I chose it because that's a line from Portal 1, but it makes it clear as far back as Portal 1 that there is an emotional relationship between Chell and GLaDOS, which doesn't make sense in the context of the Portal 1 universe because you don't have any of the backstory. But once you right. learned it in Portal 2, sort of in perhaps, you know, fun, coincidental, retroactive continuity, you're like, oh, that stuff she said in Portal 1 totally makes sense, because why would Chell be breaking GLaDOS's heart by defeating her? Like, mm-hmm. there is obviously a relationship between these two personalities or entities, and by the end of Portal 2 there is, you know, there is a present relationship and the past relationship is revealed, and it all starts to make sense. And, you know, the beautiful ending of Portal 2 that we'll get to just sort of nails it all home and wraps the series thus far up into a nice right. little bow.
Did you see the did anyone find the secret portrait of Cave and Carolyn together? Yep.
You can find the portrait of Cave and Carolyn before entering Test Chamber 2, when you have the repulsion gel and the propulsion gel. Before going through the Emancipation Grill, when you're in the corridor, look up and to the left. You should see a space that you can portal up to. If you go into the office, then you'll see the portrait. You'll get a bit of extra dialogue from GLaDOS, and you will also get an achievement. And while I'm talking about achievements, before finding GLaDOS in her potato battery on top of the being pecked by the bird on top of the button that you need to press to progress the story. In the room above the room where GLaDOS is, if you head to the back in the far corner, if you look behind one of the filing cabinets, you will find a pair of automatic doors. If you go through that, you'll find some sealed off test chambers, and one of them will be open. When you go out to that, that is the Borealis dry dock. If you look at the life ring, I don't know what they're actually called, but anyway, you'll see one of those orange life rings that you have on boats, and it says Borealis on that. If you look at that, you'll get an achievement. One more achievement, may as well, while I'm here. All of the sealed off doors that you find in that first section underground, if you look at each and every single one, you'll get an achievement for that. And it's worth looking for them, because most of them will have a sort of an intercom thing. If you press it, you'll hear some dialogue from Cave Johnson, which is absolutely hilarious. You know, there's ones about turning your blood into pure gasoline and having your, we're going to sit you in front of this superconductor and see what happens. And it's just hilarious.
I don't know where that is. I hadn't come across it. I knew about it from reading about the game, but not, I didn't find it in real life. So
it's
but,
in one of the, you have, there's like one of the giant rooms. There's a place where you can portal up to, and there's just like, there's a little side office with there, and you get a little bit of extra dialogue from GLaDOS when you're in there about like this being more and more familiar.
Oh, and yeah, I did get that. Looks like so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you hop up on a box, and there's like a door that you can open from up on a box or something and get back in there. But because I did see that, and there is more dialogue there.
I like also kind of all the little jokes along the way about, I mean, after having played all the Half-Life games with you know, spending how many hours exploring all the like, you know, sprawling Black Mesa kind of bland corporate complexes, it's like all the like repeated little jokes about how Aperture Science is, you know, basically Black Mesa's, you know, little runner-up second place.
It's even
brother.
On like, yeah, it's on the slides in the yeah. conference room, like how did you meet Black Mesa?
Yep, it's on their other plaques, and you know, and they're just it's. They have so much more character to them compared to, you know, and some of that is the technology that was available in terms of their level design. But, you know, Aperture Science looks like a more fun place to work for.
Yeah, if you read the backstory that is on the wiki pages and perhaps not as well expressed in the game, the idea was that, like, they had heard about something that Black Mesa was making. They said, I forget what it was, but it was, like, drainage ditches or, you know, something that he drained. They said, we should make one like that, but also give it AI. And that was the advent of the GLaDOS project, was like, we could take something that should never have artificial intelligence. Can we also make artificial intelligence? I wish I could remember what it does. Someone in the chat room should look it up. But it, like the absurdity of the idea, like that the way we compete is to do these crazy things, fits perfectly with Cave Johnson once you meet the man through his recordings. That, yes, that is essentially what they would do. And it is a really terrible idea, as everyone will find out once the neurotoxin started flowing.
Yeah.
So Jason, we've talked a lot of praise about this game. I have some criticism.
Can I cover one more character before we get to it?
Absolutely.
I want to talk about Wheatley briefly, just to give people an opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
I have loved my first podcast that I ever really loved was the Ricky Gervais Show. And one of the things that I really loved about it, everybody talks Carl Pilkington was kind of a breakout character, being himself, very strange person. I always loved Stephen Merchant in the Ricky Gervais Show, because what I loved about him was he didn't talk a lot, but whenever he would say something, it was just insane and insanely funny. And I always enjoyed Stephen Merchant. So to have him be a character and have him be this bumbling, helpful, but not very helpful, turned the villain of the story for a while, bumbling still, but villain. That infused so much humor into the whole story. And I thought it was a great bit of casting. And when we were talking, a couple episodes ago, I think we mentioned, I think it was maybe even the last episode, we mentioned, Destiny and, That Wizard Came from the Moon and things like that. I want to appreciate a really nice bit of casting that having Stephen Merchant as Wheatley, I really enjoyed him.
I love the introduction of Wheatley. I love how the way that he downplays the fact that you might have brain damage by saying that it's not out of the question that you might have a very minor case of serious brain damage. And then I absolutely love the way that he is piloting the shipping container through the facility. He's crashing into things. He's smashing the place up. It is absolutely terrifying and hilarious all at the same time. He's just complaining about what the bosses are going to do when they come down and find that there's 10,000 flipping vegetables all over the place. And then my absolute favorite part of this entire sequence.
I think this is a docking station. Get ready. Good news. That is not a docking station. So there's one mystery solved. I'm going to attempt a manual override on this wall. Could get a bit technical. Hold on.
And then he repeatedly smashes against the wall, and all the while you're sitting in this shipping container going, what is going on? I'm going to die. But I think this is the best introduction to a character possibly ever in gaming. It's so good. It really gets you on board with Wheatley right off the bat. You just know that this is going to be a funny character and you're going to have a good time with him. Another thing that I really like about Wheatley is his rather unique approach to hacking.
Right, I'm going to have to hack the door so that we can get at it. Technical, you'll need to turn around while I do.
Response.
Hello.
Turn around. I'll only be a second, if you wouldn't mind. Done. Hacked.
Response.
Yeah, I know. Okay, go on, just pull that turret out.
And this is another clip that I really like, and I don't think a lot of players would have heard Wheatley saying this because it's one of those things, but in Portal 2, you'll find that a lot of dialogue is extra stuff that they've written just in case the player isn't immediately doing what they're supposed to be doing. So it's this point where trying to destroy the neurotoxin generator, and Wheatley is in the room next to us hacking the computer.
Parent interface with the neurotoxin central control circuit. Begin.
Hello, Gov. Neurotoxin inspector. Need to shut this place down for a moment. Here's my credentials. Shut yourself down. I am totally legit from the Board of International Neurotoxin Observers from the United Arab Emirates. Hello. Nothing. He's good, this one. He is good. I'm going to need to break out the expert-level hacking maneuvers now, all right? You asked for it, mate.
One other thing that I'll note about the room that we're in as this scene plays out, because I could go on forever just pulling out clips of Wheatley. He has so many funny lines, but the room that we're standing in as all of this happens is the Implosion Observation Annex. And there is a sign just out the front of the neurotoxin generator that says, in case of implosion, look directly at implosion.
So there.
I thought he was really annoying at the beginning. Well,
he is intentionally annoying, right? But I found
he's
that amusing.
To be right.
But
he's entertaining, don't you think?
Yeah, I thought, what I'm saying is my gut reaction to him, like, good performances are nuanced, and you can watch them again and understand subtleties. My gut reaction to Wheatley was blech.
Huh.
You know, like, he just seemed really annoying. And then, like, as you go through the game and you, like, learn about, you know, his psychology and how, like, you know, he feels like he could never, you know, get beyond this one single task, and then you see him fail and like have a very human response to not being able to live up to a job, and you see him breaking apart and this darkness like come over him. I thought it was just a wonderful performance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's meant to be, I mean, that character is meant to be bumbling and annoying at the beginning so that it has a place to go, and it does it. But I do love that character of big dreams that they cannot live up to. that's a nice character.
I like the idea also that he, like, they do, again, they get away with a lot of twists in this thing, because but they don't do the easy way, which is have someone who's with you in the beginning who you later find out the entire time was plotting to be the bad guy. And as it turns out, the bad guy is actually the good guy. That is not what happens in Portal 2. He did intend to be a good guy. It's just that when he got into that chassis, it's like, oh, all this power.
Yeah.
And I'm very smart now.
When I first played Portal 2, and even in subsequent playthroughs, I never really bought Wheatley's sudden turn towards evil against us. I'm not entirely sure why, but that moment didn't quite work on me. It might have been that for the entire time I'm sitting there with a big stupid grin on my face because Wheatley has said, you know, he's trying to prove how smart he is by talking in Spanish and having absolutely no idea what he has just said. And if you translate what he says in Spanish, he says, "You're using this translation software incorrectly. Please consult the manual." I think this is classic Wheatley. But yeah, that moment where as you're ascending in the elevator and suddenly he goes, "Actually, why do you have to leave right now?" And you start coming back down. You see that his expression changes, the aperture of his eye narrows slightly, and the color tone of the room goes from cool to warm and it darkens, so you see a lot more red light. Wheatley has a red light coming up underneath him, but I didn't get that change when I played it for the first time, and even later on I knew that it's coming, but I still didn't get it. I think I'm slowly coming around and starting to buy into how Wheatley turns evil once we put him in Gladys's chassis. And before getting into the elevator, if you hang around for a few moments, Wheatley will actually talk about getting in the elevator with you, and he's worried about how is he going to fit into the elevator now that he's in this enormous body. And he talks about, you get into the elevator, I'll send it up, and then I'll immediately eject myself, and then we'll get into the elevator, and hopefully it doesn't stop on the way up. So I think hearing that has made me feel that transition from going from good to evil a little bit more than what I had done previously.
So that was not his plan from the beginning. And the good guy is like, "Oh, actually, GLaDOS is my friend," or whatever. No, not really. No. You know, once she gets back in that thing, like that's what makes the ending poignant, because, you know, Caroline deleted, right? You think you know what's up with these AIs, but you don't, because GLaDOS is never going to be your super duper friend. And Wheatley really was trying to be a good guy, but just you put him into that robotic frame and give him all this information, and just things go wrong. So
power's going to corrupt.
Yeah, and it's a great those few turns again in like a 2-hour game. They do those turns. You have those number of turns in like a, you know, 100-hour Final Fantasy type game. They cram them into 2 hours. It's just a fairly good density of interesting and somewhat unexpected plot twists, all of which feel honest and sort of human, which is weird to say when you're thinking about AI. But
can somebody make me a T-shirt that says "GLaDOS is never going to be your super duper friend"? Like, that should be the episode title. That is.
But she may not kill you.
She may not kill you. Right? Yeah. Never going to be pals. Let's talk about, we've been talking a lot about Upside, and we should talk a little bit about what our criticisms and negative feelings about Portal are. Brianna, you want to jump in?
Yeah. I mean, look, this game is a masterpiece. If I recall correctly, I think it got a 10 back on GameSpot when it came out. I may be remembering that wrong, but we all agree that this game is a masterpiece. So, you know, this is just nitpicking. I think Portal 2 is a much stronger game from a narrative point of view. I think mechanically Portal 2 is a weaker game than Portal 1. Portal 1, the mechanics of it basically came from an indie game that, you know, Valve saw, and they saw the potential in it, and, you know, they basically bought it and turned it into part of the Orange Box and basically expanded the idea. And if you look at Portal 2, you know, the new gel mechanic is something very similar to that, that they saw an indie game and they kind of took that mechanic and put it on there. Yeah, I have to say, I thought those puzzles were fun. I enjoyed Portal 2, but I felt like that particularly did not, it didn't feel as organic with it. And I actually think the later half of Portal 2 is actually kind of weak. Because I think most of the puzzles come down to this frustration factor where you find yourself with the portal gun and you're going, okay, what is the part of this room that's covered in moon dust paint? Mm-hmm. So you find yourself shooting portals everywhere, just waiting for something to stick. Very often, way, 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 way out in the distance, just like hoping to find this one little tile. And it was very reminiscent of this. Do you guys remember in the 80s when you would play these adventure games? It would very much be a pixel hunt. trying to find the exact
what's pixel. The hotspot I can click on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And I still think this was well done, but I feel like it was weaker.
Let me double up on that. One of the things that struck me, and I know this is, again, it's funny for me to say this as somebody who doesn't play a lot of games and doesn't mind that this was easier, and I totally get the conceit of the fact that these are test levels. So the whole point of them is that there's a solution, but after a while, I did find myself being disappointed that every time there's an angled wall, you drop through a portal onto a portal on the angled wall and will be flung exactly where you need to go. And I started to think, I get why they explain why this is, because these are test portals, but it didn't feel organic to me, and it felt not dangerous enough. I wanted there to be angled walls that didn't fling me anywhere, mm-hmm. or flung.
They don't give you a lot of false leads, right?
Or that were three wide, and if you put it on the left side, you would be safe, but on the right side,
that,
you would die.
A little bit of alignment, but the main challenge that Portal 2 has is: can you make a longer game, especially for players who have played Portal 1, where they don't get tired of doing the same thing? And that's what gets into what Tony was saying: is that like, throughout the whole length of Portal 2, the way they're trying to stave off boredom or repetition is by gradually adding new mechanics. And when you gradually add those new mechanics, they don't remove the old ones. So like the angled walls with putting a portal on them, those are still there just because it assumes you've learned that and it's a given. But hopefully on that level, there's something new, like something new you're doing with the gel, or something new you're doing with those little, what are they, those little glowy walls or the tubes or whatever.
I mean, it is a little weird from a puzzle design, because like, in every chamber, it's like you're going to use every kind of interactive part of it, right? You're going to use every angled wall and every laser beam and things like that. There's no extra pieces, right?
Well, like on some of the levels, though, it does give you a fairly wide open white space to put the portal, and you do have to be somewhat, like Portal 2 got better about letting you place portals on walls in sort of like non-integral positions.
But there's never you would fail. You don't need or
but,
cubes
but like
you aren't gonna
there, use. There's a level late in Portal 2 where there's one angled wall. And that's the one you have to obviously slingshot yourself through to get to the part on the other side. It is exactly timed for that, and that's how it works. And there is a ramp, and it's very, and there's orange gel, and you're like, well, I know how this works. And on one level, it's like, great, I know how this works. I need to figure out how to spray the orange gel on the ramp, and I can jump over it. And the ramp is not the puzzle. The ramp is the what you're solving for. And yet I kept feeling like, really, every single item that is out of whack here slightly is going to be used in the solution. Like, I never had a question. The ramp was going to be part of the solution. The angled wall was going to be part of the solution. And I know
the type of game it is. I mean, you mentioned the conceit supports that. But like, the other thing is they're trying not to give you a dead end. It's like the directive in Mario games that basically, like, there should be no way that you can get yourself into a situation where the only way out is to restart the level. Yeah. Either you're going to die and it'll respawn you someplace else.
In Portal 2, that did actually happen to me.
But that's what they're trying to prevent by sort of the conservation of items or and stuff like that, is like, never let the person get into a situation where they can't finish the level, either by activating something and like, and now you can't take it back, or now you have no way to wash off that gel or anything like that. That's part of just, you know, good puzzle design to avoiding frustration in sort of the modern age of gaming. In the old days, they didn't care. They would say, screw you, get stuck, start the whole game over. Right?
I don't know, I'd like an extra angled wall or two, so I have to actually look and think that which one of these is going to point me at a place I want to go. But I didn't have to do that because I knew it would put me somewhere.
There are weaker levels and stronger levels. Like some of the levels where you're just kind of passing through sort of like an atrium where there is kind of a minor puzzle to make progress. Really, the thing that's happening there is like some long voiceover and like not, it's not like test chambers, because once you get into the Cave Johnson part, it's not like you're going from one chamber to the next. The test chamber is easier to lay out and then a satisfying puzzle. In this sort of traveling through the underground, sometimes you're just traveling through, and sometimes it's, you know, all right, well, there's some minor puzzle that I have to do to move on to the next thing, but this is not a chamber. And like, especially in those parts with the gels flowing everywhere, I'm not entirely sure of this, but I'm pretty sure the very first time I played this, which was a long time ago, I solved some of those puzzles in sort of the non-standard way, often making it harder for myself than the actual solution is. But there are multiple ways to solve a lot of those, because once you have the gel and you can spray everywhere, you can solve them in ways that don't involve, for example, the one random angle wall hanging out there, because you can pull these gels over here and
when in doubt, paint the whole room.
Yeah,
I think the gels.
Right, it's fun to paint those rooms.
The gels change the formula for it a little bit in a way that I think some people might feel weird about, because I think a lot of the really good portal puzzles, like figuring out the solution and implementing it, like there's not a big gap there, right? Like implementing it is pretty easy and it's not reliant on timing. Whereas with the gel ones, it's like, the solution is not obvious. I'm just going to start kind of throwing stuff at the wall by spraying gel everywhere and stumble across something.
But there's more than
or
one
even
solution.
If I do, like if I do see what the solution is, it's like, well, now I'm going to have to, you know, put gel everywhere and put paint everywhere for a while. Whereas other places, it's a little bit more kind of like rapid to kind of get from solution to implemented solution.
So if you look
at
YouTube videos,
what the scientists would have said. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what would have the observing scientists would have said if you were an actual test subject in those chambers, just flinging paint everywhere like a lunatic? You know, they
sometimes
would think
you gotta throw science at the wall
feces.
And see what sticks.
Yeah, exactly.
It off with water afterwards.
That's why they use human test subjects now and not the apes that they previously used.
I have to say, I was a little disappointed in Portal 2 in terms of the level of challenge, right? I mean, I never really felt really stuck or challenged, and I think they...
I have heard other players complain about the lack of challenge in Portal 2. For me, I think Portal 2 is more about the story than the puzzles that you're solving. So I'm okay with it being less challenging, but as far as I'm concerned, Portal 2 has just the right amount of challenge spread throughout the game. I mean, there is some of the longer test chambers that, like I said earlier, even after playing the game multiple times, I'm still getting stuck on them. And the going through the sections in between test chambers, you know, some of those can be pretty tricky. Jason Snell talks about later on the angled parts of wall, and he's complaining that, you know, it's always just the one part of wall that you go into. Well, I was watching myself play through the 50s aperture, and I noticed that there are a lot of spaces where there's a long section of angled wall, and there's only one spot that will be successful, but either side of it, there are a lot of spots where if you put a portal there, you'll be unsuccessful. And what I find is in a game like this, or any game where the story is more important than the gameplay, if the gameplay starts getting in the way of story, that's when the game becomes frustrating. And you're less inclined to play the game, and you're less likely to enjoy the game overall and come away from it feeling that was a really good experience. So I think if there were more instances where putting a portal will lead to your death, and there's no way of knowing that that's going to happen until you actually go through it, well, then you're just discouraging players to put portals in places, because they're just gonna, well, I don't want to put a portal there because I don't know where it goes and I might die. And when they're being discouraged to put portals in places, they're being discouraged from solving the puzzles, and they're being discouraged from, say, playing the game. So I think that Valve did a very good job on balancing Portal with just the right amount of challenge versus being able to easily get through the game for the story.
They do a good job with kind of the co-op part of Portal 2 is, I think, a lot more challenging because the complexity is increased because now you have two characters and you have puzzles that require four portals and lots of timing and things like that. But it's this kind of tacked on, like, there is kind of a story to the co-op, but it's not the same, engaging, interesting story that you have for the campaign. So I'm guessing there's probably a lot of people that have played Portal 2 and have never played the co-op part of Portal. You're not missing out on a lot in terms of story, but you are missing out on some interesting challenges as far as the puzzles go.
So if you check
online,
into
my other, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say there are videos of people solving all the different rooms in Portal 2 in extremely exotic ways, either by, for example, not using items that seem to be necessary but really aren't, or using momentum in ways sort of not intended by the game designer. And that is sort of the metagame within Portal and Portal 2, especially once the gels come in, because you can solve a level without doing the prescribed things involving very difficult first-person moves of like throwing cubes through things and flinging yourself through a series of portals. And there is that extra level of the game. It's just that isn't required. Like, you can do it the easy way and it works. The only reason you're doing it the hard way is to make it harder for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, Portal and Portal 2 are crazy for people who do speed runs, but that's not kind of the game that's there. That's a game you can play with Portal 2, but that's not the game as intended.
I'll post a couple of links in the show notes to video showing some pretty impressive cube tricks in Portal 2. It's just amazing what you can pull off in this game. The amount of coordination that you'd need to pull these things off, and to all those people saying that Portal is better played on a keyboard and a mouse, hey, this guy's playing it on an Xbox.
Brianna, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that co-op mode of Portal 2 is well done for what it is, but I think it really betrays the spirit of Portal. And I think you have to really look at that era of gaming when Portal 2 came out and kind of, put into some historic context. Yeah, this is a time where, in order to combat used game sales, Electronic Arts had started to institute a $5 fee to access multiplayer to kind of recoup these fees. And, a lot of games had a multiplayer mode kind of tacked on in order to, oh, no, don't take my game back. Don't sell it. Like, keep me. I promise there's going to be content coming, which, Portal 2 followed up with.
I have a much less cynical explanation for why co-op is in Portal 2. What I heard soon after the game was released, that the reason why co-op is in Portal 2 is that Valve found that a lot of people played the original Portal with somebody else sitting next to them. So it might be their partner or their best friend or a sibling. So they are playing the game together. They are helping each other to solve the puzzles. So one of them is sitting there doing all the work with controlling the character, and the other's sitting in the background, just pointing out things that the person playing might have missed. So that's the reason why co-op was added, so that now the second person who is just watching what is going on and, being a backseat driver can now actually be in the game with the first player and actually help each other to solve the puzzles.
I know, Jason, I have to push back and kind of disagree with you a bit on the difficulty level, just because I know so many people whose kind of gateway drug into gaming was Portal. And I think it was pretty much the perfect difficulty.
I agree
the conceits. Yeah.
Like at the end of Portal 2, having it be a little bit more, less of a conservation of features in a room that you have to think about it a little more is probably not upping the difficulty too much at that point, because it felt kind of samey to me. Believe me, I can't believe I'm making this argument, because I love the level of difficulty of Portal, but even for me it was like, oh, this again, a few times when we got all the way to the end. It's like, shouldn't it be getting harder here? Shouldn't I have to guess about whether this is the right thing to jump through? But instead it's like, nope, just jump. It'll take you somewhere good. And it would.
Sure.
Always.
That's fine. I don't agree, but that's fine. But where it feels incongruous to me is with Portal 2 co-op, which my husband and I call divorce mode, because it is so unbelievable. Like, Portal is a game. It's one of these rare games I really look for for Frank, who isn't a like, let's destroy everything. Like, I got him Captain Toad.
Frank and I need to hang out more. I think Frank and I have a lot in common.
Oh my god! Like, just for TOS
we'll watch some Star Trek. We'll play some gentle games.
Yeah. But it's the difficulty spike is so high, where it's really a game that only expert players can get through, because like, you're not just dealing with, like, suddenly you have four portals and you're trying to communicate with people across an internet connection. Yeah. And there are many more speed puzzles. And
you can actually play Portal 2 co-op split screen on a console or a PC or Mac. I tried to do split screen co-op on the PC the other day, but I couldn't get, you need to have two controllers, and I had an Xbox 360 controller and an Xbox One controller. I couldn't get either of them to work properly. So it's doable, but I don't know how successful that it actually is. But it saves you from having to find some stranger on the internet to play with you, and is generally a much nicer experience. The downside of doing split screen, though, is part of the co-op campaign is GLaDOS is trying to play the robots Atlas and Peabody off of each other, turn them against each other. She wants them in conflict, so she is praising one bot and rubbishing the other one. When you're playing co-op in split-screen mode, you know that this is happening because you can hear both sides of the conversation, because she will talk to Atlas and then she will talk to Peabody and give praise to one and scold the other. But when you're playing over an internet connection, well, you only ever hear what you are supposed to hear for the character that you are playing as. So I think it works a bit better if you don't hear the other side of what's going on, and you're less aware that GLaDOS is actually trying to turn you and your partner against each other. And you remember how I talked about my CRT TVs at home. Well, that's how me and my sister played the Portal 2 co-op on my Xbox 360. Yes, with a CRT TV. It's not a great experience. It was small, it was far away, and it added an extra layer of challenge because the screen was so much smaller. We didn't finish the Portal 2 co-op campaign. We got a reasonable distance into it, but after a while we sort of lost interest, and we have been meaning to get back in and finish the campaign, although I want to play it from the beginning because I've forgotten what happens in the campaign. So yeah, I would like to play that again somehow, and perhaps I've got multiple computers in the house that will be able to play it. Perhaps this time I'll set my sister up with a Steam account, and I can be in one room and she can be in another room, and we'll play each other over the internet and see how that goes.
I think that it's a great game for what it is, but I think it lacks the accessibility that makes Portal such a beautiful, perfect example of game design. Mm. Yeah, I think it really kind of betrays that casual audience. And I think it's sad that there's an entire layer of Portal that, you know, a lot of the audience is just simply never going to get to explore. And I think you can look at some examples of game design, like the last Lara Croft in the Temple of Osiris. This is a game that, you know, hasn't gotten a lot of press, but it is a really, really good example of multiplayer where the puzzles change for one, two, or three players. And because of that, it's accessible to players of vastly different levels of skill. And I just think that this masterpiece of a game did not handle that mode particularly skillfully.
Tony, you played the co-op mode, didn't you?
Yep.
Weren't you? What do you think about it?
I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you can only play it with one other person. There's right. no flexibility, right?
It's not multiplayer.
The correct number is one.
It's
you can't
co-op.
Play it by yourself, right? Yep. You know, you can't play it with two other people. I mean, I think it does an okay job in terms of, like, we're going to throw some more complicated puzzles at you. I think a lot of people's experiences will be shaped by what that person they're collaborating with is. Because, for example, if you're playing with somebody who is more comfortable with Portal than you and is going to kind of run ahead and tell you what to do for everything, like, that's not going to be a satisfying experience, right? I mean, I think, you know, I played it with, I think, different parts of it with different people. They did, there was like an add-on to the multiplayer that got released at some point. I played that with a different person than I played the first part. And, you know, in the ideal experience, like, it's a good collaboration. And I don't know, I'm really into puzzles and I work on a lot of puzzles, you know, they're non-video game related and it's fun to work with somebody else, but it's fun when it's a collaboration and when people go back and forth and, you know, somebody's able to contribute something and somebody else is able to, you know, build on top of that. But I mean, I've played lots of collaborative games, you know, that have not gone well. I'll never forget a particularly bad experience where I was playing a game of Neverwinter and, like, I got lost and I showed up at the big boss fight and, like, the big boss was dead. And my friend had, like, already opened the portal back to town and left. And it was like, so I just showed up at this murder scene and all the loot is gone. And it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, but that's more about the, you know, who you're playing with and how that's kind of facilitated than the game itself.
All right.
But, you know, it's weak as far as, you know, it's this tacked on kind of side story, right? And, you know, there's, you play as these two funny little robots and that's kind of fun. And there's a little bit more Gladys, but the, you know, the heart is not there. It is a lot more about the puzzles and the mechanics of the puzzles. Which, you know, pales compared to the, you know, the delightful story that you get in Portal 2.
Right.
Like, you're not invested in the two robots, though. Like,
no, they're
two
totally
robots. They do
disposable.
Kind of have a story, and there is a plot point reveal at the end of the co-op thing, but you're not, you don't embody them in the way that you embody Chell when you play.
There's
the
even
game.
Kind of the joke, they get disassembled and then reassembled at the beginning and end of every level, right? They're like, they're totally disposable.
It's like the Star Trek transporter.
Yeah.
Tiff, you were going to say?
No, I was going to say that I completely agree about there's not being a lot of heart in it. But at the same time, it is really nice to play because you're like, I just want a little bit more Portal sometimes. You know, because the games are so short. You just need a little bit. It's like, I just want to get that last chocolate from the fridge. You know, that's what it feels like. So I played with somebody from, I think he's from Germany, _ND_. He just, like, answered my call out on Twitter. I'm like, I need to play this. Quick, get over here.
Well, the underscore family is a, it's a, that's a good family.
I don't know if they're related.
They're good people.
It's underscore's German cousin.
Unterscore.
With
a K. Yep. And a
number. But no, it was really fun playing with him. And we had both never played before, even though it's, like, you know, years later since it's been released. So. Like, it is just it's Portal dessert. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, it's a really different experience, right? Because when you're playing the single player, like, you're alone with, you know, Wheatley and Gladys and Cave Johnson, whereas, you know, I would have, when I've played the multiplayer, it's like kind of nonstop back and forth banter and, like, oh, what if we put a portal over here, what if we port, it's a very different game experience. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah it's not the meat and potatoes that Portal is. It's a little, you know, something
portal dessert.
Exactly.
The peanut butter's over there, the chocolate's over there, and you got to do a portal thing to get them together to get to John's metaphor.
Delicious portal s'mores.
I wanted to mention we've been going for a little while now, and I if there's anything else people want to talk about, think about that while I tell you this anecdote, which is I just wanted to mention my son is no longer obsessed with Portal, but for a long time he was obsessed with Portal, and he was not obsessed with Portal from playing it. And he plays Minecraft and he plays Terraria, and you know, he is now 3D game literate, and I think if he played Portal now, he would have no problem with it at all. Although he'd have to maybe scratch his head at some of the puzzles, but I think he would he would enjoy it. He and my daughter tried to play the co-op, and they got like three levels in. They're like, yeah, forget this. They went back to Minecraft. But he was obsessed with portals because he loved the concept. And there was maybe when he was in third grade, every day walking him to school, the entire conversation was about how much easier it would be to get to school if we could only make a portal. And we would talk about various ways you could use the portal and other places you could go with the portal. And do you put the portal outside in the school or do you put it inside? If you put it inside, could people walk into our house from the other side of the portal? We had long conversations. So I will always think about portal and think about the fact that my son really wants a portal gun. And unfortunately, you know, there isn't one yet. Maybe he'll invent one. But
Do you have a plan to mine moon dust? Because that would be the hard part of that, I think.
Don't eat it. Just mine.
You know, so the last boss battle in Portal 2, I really enjoyed it, but I especially enjoyed the very end as the ceiling comes down and the moon is exposed and you can see outside for the first time, and the last act you have to perform is to shoot a portal gun on the moon.
I described the moment when you fire a portal at the moon as a Doctor Who moment. You know how when David Tennant would realize the crazy solution to a problem and he'd sort of stand there for a bit and go, no, 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 no. Yes! That's how I feel when I realized that that's what I was supposed to do. You put the portal below Wheatley, you jump through that into the stalemate resolution annex. He blows up the stalemate resolution annex, throws you backwards, and begins the cutscene. So you're lying on the ground, you roll over, you look up, the roof comes away, and there's the moon. And when that happened, I thought, oh, that's nice, you can see the moon up there. Hang on, I got to go press a button. So I tried to get up and I realized that, well, you can move a little bit, but you can't actually go anywhere. So the game's telling you, no, you're not supposed to be doing that. And I looked back at the moon and I thought, moon rocks. And I pulled the right trigger and a portal goes up to the moon and holy shit, I am on the moon. I think this is the most amazing moment in all of gaming. It was just absolutely jaw-dropping to be up on the moon, to fire a portal all the way up there and just be there. I think it is fantastic.
And there's a delay as it goes before it engages. Ding. I thought that was such an awesome kind of thinking outside of all the scope of this game up to now. So simple a moment, and yet such a wonderful moment. I really enjoyed that last.
That's a great example of a game on rails because it shoves your viewpoint up there. It puts the thing in your face.
Yeah. You have to do is click, folks.
In many ways, taking away player agency, and yet it does not feel like they're taking away player agency because they have so masterfully constructed a game and universe to engage you that as soon as you get knocked backwards and the ceiling comes open, it's not unreasonable for the moon to be visible, because in a game they want to put something interesting, you know, like the same reason you come up next to the moon lander, because they want to have some visual interest.
Right.
And it immediately occurs. I've never heard of someone getting up to that point and not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
And it feels like it occurred to you as, oh, aren't I clever? That, you know, aren't I clever? Isn't the game clever? Like, you feel a satisfaction of having solved something, when in reality, what happened is they shoved your cursor onto the moon, right? Like, and they gave you no other options. Like, it is such a subversion of taking away player agency while at the same time making the player feel like they figured it out. And it is a clever idea, and it is done in a nice little animation. In some ways, I do feel like it's a little bit of a cheat where, like, you know, once you see the strings, you're like, boy, that really just, you know, rubbed my nose in it. But the first time I played it, I just felt like, that's brilliant, and I'm brilliant, and this game is brilliant.
And it's story payoff, too. I mean,
and, you know, and the whole game is about making you feel clever or brilliant, right? And so they're going to really put a cherry on top of it with that last thing there.
and then it's fun when you set it up
so that you have to put a portal underneath. You know, at that point, you have to do that to do the earlier part of the game, which sets you, like, you can't get into, as far as I know, you can't get into a situation where the other portal isn't already set at the time you're appointed at the moon. So you'd never get into a situation where you're like, well, if you had forgotten to put that portal there, then your revelation is undercut by the fact that you realize you need to put a second portal underneath. I'm pretty sure it's always underneath by that point.
There are two instances in Portal where you will create a pair of linked portals no matter which trigger or which mouse button you press. One of them is when you're going through the excursion funnel and Wheatley comes out with the big smashy spiky plate. Holmes versus Moriarty. Aristotle versus smashy spiky plate. And he starts ramming the thing against the wall. At that point, you're supposed to fire a portal and drop so that you can save yourself and start going in the opposite direction. At this point, it doesn't matter which portal you fire. You can fire the blue portal or the orange portal. You'll always create a set of linked portals in this situation. And that's because while they were playtesting it, Valve found that players would forget which portal they had fired. And there's a 50% chance that you're going to get the right one. So you don't want half of your players falling to their death because they can't remember which portal is the right one to fire. So when next time you get you playing it, you know, take note of which portal you fired and then fire the same portal again. You will be successful in that moment. And the other one, of course, is when you fire the portal underneath Wheatley, and then fire the other one up to the moon. Regardless of which one you fired before, you will always fire the correct portal up to the moon because it's set to never fail. You always create a set of linked portals because, well, imagine at that moment of the game thinking that you're so damn clever that, you know, I fired the portal at the moon and then we're going to be up there. Imagine if that failed. That would be so just devastating to have to do the boss fight again because you failed. So I think this is another example of great game design. It's we're going to put story above gameplay mechanics and make sure that this never fails in these two situations.
Yeah, you got to. That's how you do the last thing with him.
So I think we have to talk about one last thing with this game, which is the ending songs by Jonathan Coulton. So I am someone who I only like electronica, EDM, and I like some rap. But generally speaking, this kind of like folksy, like one dude with guitar playing something. It like maybe it's because I grew up in Mississippi, but it just like hits some part of my brain. I hate it. I hate
too close
it so
to banjos.
Much.
He's a liberal elite. What are you talking about? He's from Yale.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like this, both of these songs, Jason, I actually had the same experience as you that when this game came out, I said, Orange Box, another first person shooter. I don't give a frack, you know. And I actually just skipped Portal completely, despite all the accolades and acclaim. I'm just like, nope. And then I heard someone singing the Portal song in Rock Band because they released it as a free track. And I'm like, that's a really moving, fun track. I want to know more about that game. And then, you know, Steam came to OS X and, you know, I downloaded it and it was a blast. It was a wonderful game. So I think that these songs, both of them, there's just something about them that is so emotional and moving, but they're also really catchy and well done. And it's like I downloaded other albums of his hoping I'd like it. I hate it. They're terrible. Aww. But like both of these songs are just so awesome. So I don't know. I think they're part of what makes this a masterpiece because you get to the end and then like you have this really touching musical number with like turret singing.
Yes.
To you.
And the first one, like you beat GLaDOS and then she sings to you. Right. I mean that's, there's so many things in video games where it's like, I'm doing this thing that I've done before. I've never beat a boss and then had a boss sing to me over the end credits. That was new.
And it continues the story. It's not like the game ends, and it's not like, oh, here's a song reviewing what you've done in the game. No, the song continues the game. The song reinforces the game. It informs the game. It is as integrated into the game. Like, I don't know what the creative process was. I imagine that he played through a rough cut of the game first, and then he made the song about it. But there's information is added in the songs.
Content and emotion. Kind of a summary of the story, because I think I read an interview with him about it.
And content and emotion is added by the song. So it's not like... I like a good credit sequence too, and a lot of times it's just like kind of reviewing what you've done in the game. This continues the game, especially Still Alive, which is just again another jab in the side from GLaDOS, like great victory, haha, and then it's like, no, I'm still alive. When you're dying, I'll be still alive, and when you're dead, I'll be still alive. You know, like she's like exactly, starting with this was a triumph, refusing to admit defeat despite the fact that she just blew up, and I want you gone. Capping off the emotional note of the end of Portal 2, which we haven't talked about, and I do want to talk about.
All right.
The song is part of the ending. You can't say, well, now I'm not interested. I'm not going to watch the credits, and it's over. You have to watch, and not because there's some little scene at the end with each, Indian food or whatever. But
Nick Fury appears. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a capper, and they're in character, and they've got the same humor that's in the game, and I love them both. I enjoy listening to the various versions of them, the game versions and other versions that have been done. And Once You're Gone is great because, first off, it's a tough act to follow, to follow Still Alive, which, it became quite a little hit in some circles. And yet, because of the way it's done and it addresses the story points, and it's so perfectly GLaDOS, too, that it's, it's not even you win. It's just, look, okay, I won't kill you, go away. Which is your victory, right? Your victory is, she's not going to even try to kill you now, just go away.
But the underlying, so let's talk about the ending. My theory of how these all are all connected is very obvious to me, is that, Caroline was put into the computer. Chell is Caroline's daughter, probably adopted. And the whole hang-up that GLaDOS has with Chell is a mother-daughter relationship where the AI is malevolent and wants to kill all humans, but something in her feels an attachment to this girl because it was her daughter. And so the whole thing of, Caroline deleted, but then why not kill Chell? It's like, well, the easiest thing to do is really to let you go, because every time I try to kill you, it's really hard. No, it isn't. And as soon as he sends her up, you think, that makes some kind of logical sense. She does this little speech. You're like, well, maybe it does make sense. She deleted Caroline. Now she's malevolent. She's decided the best way to get rid of me is to remove me. But as you go up the elevator, the turrets sing to you in Italian with lyrics that call, talk about my baby and my little girl. Like, it is the mechanical manifestation of Aperture Science expressing the emotion that the little, curved head of GLaDOS can't say, which is, actually, you're my daughter and I love you and I can't kill you. I just need to remove you. And Once You Gone is kind of like I'm never going to admit to you that I'm not killing you because I love you. Really, what I'm going to tell you is, really now I just want you gone. It's kind of like the GLaDOS herself can't say these things to Chell, but the whole of Aperture Science can say it through the singing and through the removal and everything. And she gets chucked out the door and the door is closed behind her and she's out into the strange world. And then you get the credit song, which you think is saying, I just wanted to get rid of you. I didn't feel anything for you, really, and just need to get rid of you, which is not, I think the little, and with the giant animal striped turret way in the background, which is great. singing that little song to you is that one of the most memorable moments of any game, I think. And it's a cutscene, just that ending trip up the elevators and realizing that GLaDOS really does love me. Mommy.
As someone said in the chat room too.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, as someone said in the chat room, which I totally agree with, once that door is closed after, you're kicked out of the facility and you're in the big field of wheat and everything, you turn around, you're like, I just kind of want to go back. You do have that feeling. Someone totally nailed it in the chat room and said that. And I was like, yes, that is exactly how I felt. Like, you kind of want to go, you're like, oh, thank God, freedom. But I have a choice now, and I kind of want to go back in.
Plus, the Combine devastated the Earth, so you don't want to hang out there anyway.
Well, I like throwing the cube out at you and slamming the door is the and stay out moment.
Well, right? Here's how I read that one. The cube is thrown out, and you're like, and stay out. But what I read it as is, and I know you have an attachment to this cube, so here's your
son. Yeah, it's a little
gift. Your mom's sending you your teddy bear, trying to make
you'll need
seem
this
like
in the big bad real world.
Yeah.
Trying to make it seem like, oh, and take your stupid toy too, but really it's like, I know you're going to need your teddy.
Yeah, she was a lot
like you.
Do you
guys ever wonder how they're going to start Portal 3? Because I wonder about that a lot.
I try not to think about it because I don't think you need to have a Portal 3. I think you need to have Half-Life 3 first at the very least.
I am absolutely in agreement with John Syracuse on this. There needs to be a Half-Life 3 before there can be a Portal 3. And really, I don't even know where you would go with the Portal 3. I don't want to imagine. I don't want to speculate. If Valve does come out with a Portal 3, I'm sure that they'll do a good job. But come on. Let's have Half-Life 3 first.
In development for France. So that's what... That's,
well, yeah, no,
that's
I'm the, sure.
Right.
How could it not be in development?
Okay. Right, exactly. So my theory is it's going to be like the movie Aliens, where like Chell is waking up in the middle of the night and she's having flashbacks, and then like her companion cube is there on the floor and she strokes it. She says, "And you little blank, you're staying right here." And then like she and the Marines from Half-Life like go back.
They have to go back.
We have to go back.
Does she have to shave her head because of lice or no?
Yes. Well, or it's an origin story and it's like baby Chell. She's like going around crawling.
She's got little test portals.
Potato battery at the science fair.
Exactly.
No, we don't know anything about the world outside the...
She and Gordon Freeman have a debate.
Outside the field of... Well, her
Half-Life. If you played Half-Life and Half-Life 2, you would know a lot about the world because they are actually in the same exact world and you can line
up the timelines.
Yes, and you can line up the timelines with each other to see what is happening during the first portal and what's the deal with like...
So is it bad out there?
It's not good.
I mean, the events of Half-Life 1...
How do you feel about the ocean?
Yeah, are happening. And the events of Half-Life 2 happen between Portal 1 and Portal 2. And Portal 2 ends in the very distant future after the events of Half-Life 2, long after the events of Half-Life 2. We're not sure how long. So that you have a gap open to put Half-Life 3 in there. But if they make a sequel, like when they were doing Portal 2, they initially weren't going to put Chell in it at all. They were going to do a new character. Like, well, we did Chell. She, you know, blew up outside the gates and that's that. But they decided wisely, I think, let's bring her back because she's a character that people like.
I'll include a link in the show notes for an app on the iOS App Store, The Final Hours of Portal 2. It's a magazine-type app that details the development of Portal 2. And one of the chapters in it, it's Chapter 5, it goes into a little bit of detail about the story of Portal 2 long before the game was even announced. Originally, it was going to be set in the 50s. You were going to be playing as a different test subject, not Chell. And this time, Cave Johnson was going to be the villain. So he was going to be put into a... he was going to be turned into an... AI, and then later on he was going to turn himself into a robot and lead a robot uprising. And the major reason why this story was ditched, although some elements have continued on, you know, because you got the line about Cave Johnson wanting to be put into a computer, or at the very least put Carolyn in there instead. But yeah, the reason that this was introduced is because they wanted to have the continuity of Chell and GLaDOS between Portal and Portal 2. And also, this different story had a entirely different mechanic. It wasn't using portals at all. So it doesn't seem right to have a game called Portal 2 that has no portals. It's... you know, not the best of ideas. So maybe we'll see this game mechanic that was tied to this story in another Valve game sometime in the future. But yeah, it is fascinating to read up on the process of developing Portal, and especially the many different changes that the story had to go through. So definitely check that app out on the App Store if you're interested.
In Portal 3, I assume they would bring back Chell again. I think maybe they've learned the lesson and not try to bring a new character there. But you start running into timing problems because Chell's lifespan is now very long because she spent all that time in hibernation where just magically she's perfectly fine, whatever. However long it is, it's not 9999999 days. Whatever it is, it's a long time. Now she's out of that, so you have to have Portal 3 take place essentially at some point a couple of years after she gets chucked out into the wheat field. And Half-Life 3, as far as we all know, has not started yet by that point. So it's a blank canvas for what you want to do. But I'm kind of not anxious to see her go back and meet GLaDOS again, because I feel like that plot line is tied up.
Yeah.
Well, it's like an extra season on your favorite show. You're like, really? You didn't need to do that.
Right.
She could go and rescue GLaDOS. GLaDOS, like, you know, gets into a jam with having to do with the events of Half-Life 3, and she has to go
GLaDOS
back.
GLaDOS doesn't need to be rescued.
I know. Well, you would think she needs to be rescued, and you'd get her, and she'd try to kill you again.
She only needs to be rescued from birds.
Maybe there's another AI problem in, you know, somewhere else or in space or something like that, and you just apply the portal, you know, technology to another setup and don't go back in.
That's the real problem.
Chell and Gordon have a child, and that child moves on into the world.
Is very talkative.
Space.
And plays through both games simultaneously, both three games.
So how do you add a new mechanic? If you do Portal 3, like, Portal 1 was very simple and had one or two mechanics. Portal 2 added pretty much every mechanic they could think of pad out a two-hour game. You can't double again the number of mechanics.
Well, there were mechanics that they cut. So there are mechanics that, you know, they tested and didn't like. So maybe they can polish that off. There was, in the original, like, indie game that became Portal, there was the mechanic where you could shoot portals through portals.
I was going to ask Jason, when you had the conversations with your son, did he ever ask why can't you, or would it be cool if you could shoot? Because I remember playing Portal 1 and being frustrated that you couldn't shoot a portal through a portal.
I think probably a lot of users probably got confused by that. So.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. I understand both from a technical perspective why they didn't do that in terms of draw distances and you know, in the time that Portal 1 was made.
But you still want it, John,
I understand. And from a mental perspective of, like, if you let me do that, I can break these levels into a million pieces because they'll just shatter in a hall of mirrors and you'll never find your way back. It'll be like the end of Interstellar.
I don't know. I think if you look at the indie game scene, like, you know, there's more innovation on ideas than there was when either of these games came to fruition. If it were me, I would scrap the gel mechanic. I would look forward. I think it didn't work well. I thought it was good. I think it's something you should probably revisit for maybe a level. You know, I think it's really going to be key to find something new, you know, like it would be very sad if Portal became a Call of Duty, you know.
Yeah,
you don't want a Portal a year forever.
Right. Yeah, no. Right.
The mechanics aren't enough to support that, but, like, I think you could take advantage of modern technology and do more things that rely on the better physics that we have these days, better fidelity physics.
Sure. You could probably do a whole series of levels with weird gravity, right?
You ever play the Swapper? Right? Any of you guys?
What was it?
Yeah,
The Swapper was an interesting mechanic that seems like it's right. I mean, obviously, it's after Portal, so I'm sure it's partially inspired by Portal. But Portal was kind of not the dawning of an upswing in indie creativity, but like Bree said, now indie games with very clever, interesting mechanics, they're all over the place compared to where they were. That's why Portal was so amazing. It's like everything was just, you know, Quake 1, 2, 3, Doom, Half-Life, you know, Battlefield 1942 or whatever. And then, you know, Portal was like this shining light. And now there's tons of games like that. And a lot of them have implemented mechanics that would have fit right in Portal 2 or 3. But of course, now somebody else did them. So I'm not quite sure.
I think, like you were saying, John, about the technical problems. You know, Source, I'm not as big an expert in Source as Unreal, obviously. But, you know, Source is an engine that's really showing its age. And, you know, I was actually very surprised with the amount of polish they managed to get on it for Portal 2 to look as good as it does. So, you know, I think that there's, you know, I don't know if the answer for Portal 3 would be to take Source apart and give it, like, yet another coat of paint and, you know, a whole new ability to do shaders and modern techniques for surfaces, you know, even though Portal isn't really a game that depends on snazzy graphics. But I think your point about technical limitations for the first two games, I think that's very well set. And
I assume they would use the Half-Life 3 engine for Portal 3,
which might
think?
might be Source 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that? Yeah, I think it is Source 2. So
I don't think it's been confirmed, but that's people are heavily speculating.
Although, like you said, like Portal 2 is very similar to Metroid Prime in that the art direction covers over insane limitations of the engine itself. Like, very good art direction can hide the fact that like there are no polygons in this scene. You know, there's like a railing and a series of flat walls, and like how does
we're gonna give
like
you a cube and we're gonna make you love it,
right? how do you make it feel like a real place? Beautiful art direction, great set design, beautiful textures. Like, spend your budget on the places where, you know, you're not gonna make your engine any better. You're not gonna be able to have fancy shaders. Like, it's amazing they could even pull off like the gels and the blobs as well as they did, which practically look like sprites, right? But they spent all that time on like big, fairly high-res textures covering these essentially huge flat walls, and it makes you feel like you're in a place. The same thing like Metroid Prime. I think about how many polygons and the size of the textures in Metroid. I mean, the Metroid Prime looks beautiful, all out of proportion to the power of the engine. So that's exactly, you know, an indie game with an indie budget, that's what you want it to do. So you're not going to have $1 million. You're not going to be able to hire artists for 5 years and spend $500 million like Destiny to make these amazing visual scenes. Here's what you have. What can you do with it? And what they did with it in Portal 2 was such a huge step up over Portal 1 with the same engine, essentially, that is just phenomenal. I always remember it as one of the best-looking games, even though what it's doing is not particularly impressive technically.
I think it's the reflect map, too. Like, a reflect map is it's something you put on top of a texture that makes it look kind of science fiction-y, like a plasticky, reflective-y surface. And it can be very computationally expensive, but we found ways to cheat that in the meantime. But I think if you look at the differences in for Portal 1 in how it looks on the 360 versus, you know, even OS 10, I think, like, what I really see are the reflect maps, because I see every surface on the 360 looking really dull, and it just feels like a much less impressive world because of that.
Yeah, so, Portal 1 didn't age well, but didn't they re-implement Portal 1 with the new textures and everything? Can't you get that on Steam?
I don't know.
I would like to see the original Portal remade in the style of Portal 2, just so that there's a little bit more visual continuity between the two games. So I don't know that Valve would ever do this, but, you know, hey, maybe there's some community group out there that's willing to pull a Black Mesa and completely remake Portal in Source 2 or whatever's going to come out next.
I don't know. I hope so. That'd be cool.
I mean, like, you would think so, because like they use the set, like everything is the same. Aperture Science is the same. There are white panels on the walls. They're like, you know, the building blocks of Aperture Science are very simple. And then Portal 2 cranks up a little bit with a little bit of foliage here and there. And then, of course, the end, which is mostly pre-rendered anyway. But it's a nice twist in that. But the building blocks of Portal are limited. You know, you can build Portal 1 with a small set of blocks. And you can, I mean, it's amazing they never made your own, like, level editor, like build your own. Maybe they did, I just don't know about it. Build your own Portal levels, because you can imagine a level editor with those things.
Yeah, there is a community Portal level.
I mean, like, official, like, make that another metagame.
No, there is. I think
it's
there
in
is.
The multiplayer in Portal 2.
There's a level builder, and then you
they've
can share
done stuff
them.
With getting people to do that, and possible, like, you know, educational value of having people build, you know,
in the co-op
use it as a
in Portal 2?
No, there's
not
a
the
tool that you can download to build test chambers.
Oh, I did not know that.
We just need to do a version of Load Runner that takes place inside Portal, John. That's what it needs to be. 3D Load Runner.
Load Runner would be a lot easier with a portal gun, let me tell you.
Oh man, it would. My only idea I'm going to throw out for a Portal 3 is, I actually think, some of the gel stuff I could live without, but I would love a paint gun that paints the white moon dust paint. So
what
that
if
you
they give you
so that you have to think about where to put your portal in some places.
Well, why wouldn't I just paint every
then just paint
wall.
The whole room. Yeah.
Well,
it's
if you
so crazy.
But I said I like
limited
painting
ammo.
Things, right? I enjoy painting things. I could paint the whole damn room and be like, this is a beautiful room, and then I would win the level and move on. That could happen. That there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know. It could be interesting.
What if they gave me like a machine gun, and then there's like guys I shoot, maybe they're zombies.
That's a good idea.
Nazis. They're gonna have to run with that one.
Jason can play as Ratman and
do
just
that
like go
yet.
Around
that
painting all the exciting. Murals.
Yeah. What if my guns could gain experience and I could upgrade the guns and they would level?
But I have special tables where I can only do it in certain areas, which is completely unrealistic.
I want to program the turrets. That's what I want to do for the next game. Just program the turrets. Send them out. See what they do. It'll be like a tower defense game with turrets.
Keeper.
Yeah. Anything else we should talk about before we go? Anything that we haven't covered?
The music, Jason. Jeez, you didn't talk about the music. I love the music in Portal, and I love the music even more in Portal 2. It's both are fantastic soundtracks for different reasons. John did make the comment in the episode that if you play through Portal and then come out the other end and someone asks you, oh, so what did you think of the soundtrack? That Portal had a soundtrack? What? It did. You might not notice it as you're playing it, but yeah, you do really notice it if it's not there. The music in Portal is very atmospheric stuff, so I quite like to have that on in the background because it's nice subtle music. The music in Portal 2 is a lot more obvious that there's music there. And one of the things that you might notice as you play the game is the music will change depending on which thing you're interacting with in the world. So if you are, for example, redirecting the lasers, there is music that will play when you successfully redirect the laser into the laser receptacle, whatever it's called. If you're going on the aerial faith plate, that will have different music as you're soaring through the air like an eagle piloting a blimp. And the gels, the propulsion gel and the repulsion gel, they have their own unique sounds, music that plays as you interact with them. It's something that was brought up in the final hours of Portal 2 app that Valve went into this sort of long period of, look, we're not going to develop anything, we're just going to experiment. And this is one of the things that came out of that period of experimentation, that music changing according to what objects you're interacting with the world. So it's sort of a little reward that the player gets for completing each stage of the puzzle, that you get to hear more of the music. I think that is it's a really good idea, and it gives Portal a different feel to most other games. The Portal 2 soundtrack is available for free from thinkswithportals.com/music with the all-important .php at the end. I'll have links for that in the show notes. And the Portal soundtrack, you can get that from Steam, I believe. I haven't looked into the details on this, but I believe it's, if you have Portal, you can get the soundtrack for free. I'm not 100% sure if you need to pay anything if you don't have the game, but, you know, why would you get the soundtrack if you don't have the game? And why are you listening to this if you don't have Portal 1? So definitely check the music out. It's well worth a listen. And
I'll take that silence as a no.
I like the fact that
AIs love paradoxes. That's a Star Trek ism.
Oh yeah!
There.
Oh yeah! 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 That's,
AIs can't resist paradoxes.
That is a beautiful moment where GLaDOS's whole plan of defeating Wheatley is doing a Captain Kirk on Wheatley, and it's like say, you know, this statement is true, that statement was a lie, and you know, all these
and
things.
She tries
work.
To not listen to herself saying it, and yeah. Wheatley's like, "All right, well, whatever."
I turned that off. It's not a problem. Yeah, that was a beautiful moment. As a fan of confounding Star Trek and androids, I thought that was a really good moment.
Oh, I think a final thing, I'll send these all to Jason for the show notes, but pretty much every line that GLaDOS, Wheatley, and the Corps and Cave Johnson say are available on the portalwiki.com with audio files. And there's two things about that. One, there are so many good lines, and if you only play through the game once, you probably don't hear all of them, so you should check these out. And two, if you play the audio for them, you realize how much the line readings lose when they're not played over the top of the music. It's like, you know, Star Wars without Williams type thing, where you watch a movie without the soundtrack and you realize, boy, the soundtrack is carrying a lot of the weight of this thing. I mean, you might think back and say, Portal, did that even have music in the background? It totally did, because as soon as you hear these lines read without music, they sound like they're missing something.
And there's room tone too. There's a lot of room tone, a lot of echo in these chambers, a lot of reverb. Yeah.
And especially in the final battle, like in Portal 1, with all the zinger she's sending at you, with the music is like, timed pretty well with the pacing of like removing the cores and dumping them in the incinerator, and then she says the particular lines. She has some great lines. That we could end on picking favorite lines that GLaDOS says.
You could
you
add
are
them
a horrible
to...
person.
Yeah. That's what it says here. A horrible person. We weren't even testing for that.
I love that so much. Oh,
all right,
victory
well,
lift.
I think we have reached the end.
I'm going to complimentary victory lift.
I feel like we're very comprehensive.
I'm going to portal everybody into space now. Space.
What?
I would like to thank my excellent panel. This was a lot of fun, and it was fun revisiting Portal too. Tony Sindelar, thank you so much for being here.
This was a triumph.
you're calling him first every time, and he takes the obvious ones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Brianna Wu, it's a pleasure to have you back. We should have you back again soon.
I'm making a note here. Huge success.
Excellent. Tiffany Arment, thank you so much for being back on. It was great.
I'm not prepared with a quote. All right.
Editing.
A horrible person. Horrible person.
We'll cut all this out. No one knows about this. There's no recording of it.
No. It's just for us. And John Syracuse, thank you, as always.
Okay. Look, we both said a lot of things that you're going to regret.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening. We will see you next time. But believe me, I am still alive.
2 + 2 = 10. In base 4, I'm fine. That was my favorite line from Portal 1.
Oh, my God.
I can't do it justice.
That's easy for me to believe. That's easy for me to believe.
Because I laughed out loud when I was playing. Because, you know, there's the stutter with the static and everything.
I think my first laugh out loud line is when they, you know, you must be the pride of subject, you know, subject hometown here. That's my first, like, really, really hard laugh in Portal 1.
And replaying Portal 2, one of my favorites was, so feel free to slow down and do whatever it is you do when you're not destroying this facility. Like, lots of, you know, semi-fourth wall breaking, understanding, mm-hmm. like, it seems like all you do, Chell, is pretty much destroy this facility. And I have to fix it. And
there's
that's
a great,
our relationship.
There's a great moment where in one of the chambers toward the end, if you step on the catapult by accident, you're flung up against the monitor that Wheatley is looking at you in. And he says something like, oh, you stupid little humans, always with, it's amazing how small your brains are. It's not me. I'm not in here. This is just a screen. It's like stupid Wheatley.
Sorry, I'm talking about achievements again. If you smash 11 of Wheatley's monitors, you will get an achievement for it. And it is worth doing because you do get more dialogue every time that you smash one of the monitors, and if you are looking for that challenge in the story mode, you know, it is a bit tricky to figure out how to smash the monitors because you need to do some very different things to propel yourself into the monitors in order to smash them.
But that was a wonderful moment because I just stepped on it by accident and got flung up to the monitor. That was a nice moment.
I like the one where she explains the metaphor to you. I just have the zinger line. Like, she gives you an insult, then you go into the elevator and she's like, that was a metaphor for you. You didn't react at the time, so I was afraid it went right over your head. So that's why I've had to insult you a second time. Mm.
I think the best one is, please assume the party escort submission.
Yes.
Oh, there's a Zeppelin related one, kind of. Like, look at you sailing through the air majestically, like an eagle piloting a blimp, but it could be a Zeppelin.
Yeah. I love that one.
Like, all the weight comments in the second one, again, you know, with the whole sort of like finding ways to hurt you emotionally, which is not something you would think an AI would do, right?
Mm-hmm. We're going to make a statue of your corpse and show people how not to eat, or what was it? How not to be. Like,
when you die, I'm going to laminate your skeleton and pose you in the lobby. That way future generations can learn from you how not to have your unfortunate bone structure.
Oh. And the end of Portal 1 where she just gets into, like, just where I think it's towards the end when she's really falling apart where she goes, that's you! That's how dumb you sound! Like, getting into, like, second grader level insults because you can't think of anything clever anymore.
I do the one visual joke that always gets me is when you're going in Portal 2 and you're going down into the deep place and you see the giant vault door and you have to hit
the
two buttons to open it and the vault door swings open and there's like a little folding chair and like a tiny door. That just, I don't know, just because there's not a lot of visual humor in it, that
the fake
door always gets me.
Valve was so in love with this giant door revealing the small, ordinary door behind it and a couple of chairs that they actually wanted to mention it as a dot point on the back of the box. It features the biggest door in games ever.
Tiff posted a screenshot of the fake door. It's like, you know, I honestly didn't think you were going to fall for that. I mean, you have to, the thing is, you have to post the game. You have to, you know, make
I got to click there.
The game. And then it makes you feel bad. You're like, but you feel injustice. You're like, but I had to open that to make the game progress. And it's just,
I really enjoy all of the lines when she's insulting Wheatley as they're trying to shut him down, including just at one point saying, "You moron!" Just like she's so angry. It's weird to hear GLaDOS angry at someone who isn't me, right? It's like, oh yeah, you get him.
That was one of my favorite Wheatley
scenes. Little potato voice.
Because she's in the potato. Yeah.
The physical humor of like when you're into that place with all the buttons. I mean, you kind of see it coming, but Wheatley's like, okay, we just got to find the button for the lights, so just don't touch anything, and the thing starts going up and hitting all the buttons. Click, 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 click. That's good. I mean, again, you don't have any agency there. I did, first time I played, I did look for the button a little bit. I mean, granted, it's kind of a texture, and you're like, well, I'm not going to be able to actually find a button because that's not one of the mechanics in this game, but I looked for it briefly.
I also like, I like that moment where you get redirected to the chamber where he's going to smash you with all the things, and GLaDOS says, uh-oh, this is the part where he kills us, and he says, okay, this is the part where I kill you, and then the chapter title comes up, which is the part where he kills you. Yeah.
See, if Steve was here, he would do Adventure Corps lines for us for an hour. You should get him to do some Adventure Corps lines, you know. Quick, what's the situation? Oh, hey, pretty lady. My name's Rick.
That's a pretty good impression, John. You should try out for Portal 3.
Steve could do, I feel like he could do a much better job.
He could.
All right.
Another wallpaper that I'll include in the show notes. This is a great wallpaper. It has the adventure sphere, and he's wearing the Indiana Jones fedora. He has a whip made out of an extension cord, and around him are it's Rick the Adventure Sphere and the Pretty Lady, done in the style of the Raiders of the Lost Ark title.
It's midnight.
It is. mission accomplished.
Yay, Portal.
And thank you to the chat room and to the people who suggested titles. Popular titles included Throw Science at the Wall, I Kind of Want to Go Back In, and Divorce Mode. But there are many.
Divorce Mode is a good title.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We didn't even talk about the comic.
And I just got it and read it last night.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The comic and the music video. I sent a whole bunch of links in the Skype thing.
More comics,
Tiff. It all together like a beautiful quilt.
More comics. What has happened to you?
My very first comic.
Did you not read the comic, Jason?
No, I haven't.
So read the comic. It's in the link. It's the first link that I sent in the chat room. And then look at the music video, which I think is neat. And then all those other ones have GLaDOS. Also, they have WAV files for every single one of the lines. So if you want to incorporate the actual lines, it's already done for you. You can find them by the text now.
I have got it. And it's in my little show notes thing. Well, thanks, everybody. Send me your files. This is this week's episode. So in the next day or so. I'm on the edge of insanity where I haven't stored any up, and it makes me nervous. But
holidays,
We recorded like 8 episodes in the span of 2 days at one point, and that was good for a while, and now here we are. But
how do you do that?
How do I store things up?
He doesn't have a job.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I'm just hanging around, not much else to do. That hurts, John.
Unemployed.
I do have
Greenland.
A job. I do have a job. I am very busy all the time. I just don't have to go anywhere to do it.
I hear your boss is a real jerk. That's what I hear.
Yeah, well, my wife says my boss makes me work too much. That is definitely true.
Yeah that's...
Your boss makes you stay in that freezing cold garage all day. All
it's 66 in here right now. It's not that bad.
Oh, it's so cold here.
Yeah. Okay. Good night, everybody. Yeah. Send me your files. And thanks, chat room, for being very busy. Lots of people in the chat room tonight. Good night. Goodbye.
Good night.
Thank you very much for listening to this listener's commentary on the Incomparables Portal and Portal 2 episode. I've really enjoyed making this commentary, getting to voice some opinions and thoughts that I've had on Portal and Portal 2 for many years. And thanks very much, Jason, for letting me do this. I know that this has been a very long episode, But I would just like to leave you listeners with one last story. My brother is a very big Aliens fan, and in his quest to consume everything Aliens related, he went out and bought Aliens vs. Predator for the Xbox 360. And I know it's not a very good game. I've heard all sorts of reviews saying that it's not a very good game. But I'm not going to stop him from buying and playing it. And he did attempt to play it, and I was on hand to help him play the game, because he doesn't have very much experience with first-person shooters. I believe that would have been the very first-person game that he has ever played. Previously, he's played one or two third-person games and some side-scrolling platformers, but that's about it. He had never had the experience of playing in a first-person game, shooting enemies, and, you know, certainly not playing a first-person game on a console. So it was a very difficult experience for him. He had a lot of trouble, and the xenomorphs in particular were a real struggle for him, because they could come out of the floors, they could come out of the walls, they could come out of the ceilings. They're always coming out of behind him, and he had a lot of trouble navigating the 3D space, finding where the enemies were coming. He had a lot of trouble aiming, firing, reloading. He was having so much difficulty playing this game. And eventually he packed it in and just decided that it wasn't fun anymore. But after this experience, well, I was thinking about what games would be good to give to someone as an introduction to first-person gaming. And just earlier in this episode, I did say that I think Portal and Portal 2 are very good games for first-time FPS players. And I did actually give Portal 2 to my brother to play, and I think he enjoyed it. It was certainly a lot more enjoyable than Aliens vs. Predator, because in Portal 2, you have plenty of time to familiarize yourself with the controls. Nothing is actively hunting you down. Nothing is trying to shoot you. There is danger in the game, but it's not active. It's more passive danger that will kill you. So, yeah, he had a long time to get used to using a controller, navigating the 3D space, firing portals. He, you know, got quite good at aiming the portals, and some of the puzzles he had a little bit more trouble with than others. And what I would do is I'd hang back, I'd be in the room with him, I'd be watching him. And no matter how much I was screaming internally that, you know, at how long he was taking to solve the puzzle, I wouldn't grab the controller from him. I would let him play by himself. I would give helpful advice when he required it. And the only time that I was playing the game is if he gave the controller to me and said, "Look, here, you do it. I've had enough of this." There was one occasion when he did give the controller to me, and it was one of those longer puzzle rooms where I'm trying to remember the solution and just I'm struggling to do it. So as I'm voicing what I need to do in order to get out of the room, and I was like, okay, I need to get this cube over here, but I can't remember how to do that, and that I need to read the laser or whatever. I can't remember which test chamber it was, but as I'm thinking aloud, he grabs the controller from me and then he goes and solves the puzzle. It was a great experience watching him do that, and part of the reason why that was so amazing and made me so proud is I'm going to reveal a little known fact. It's not like it's a secret, it's not like I'm embarrassed by it, it's just that people don't need to know, and I don't feel the need to talk about this. My brother has autism. It's only very mild, and for the most part, I forget that he has autism. To me, he's just my brother. But you know, it autism can make it hard to do certain things, and certainly this was playing a first person game on a console. It was a bit more. It's a bit more difficult. There's a lot of hand-eye coordination. There's a lot of spatial thinking. There's all sorts of things that, autism might make it harder to pick up on the concepts. But I think he did really well at picking up the game, and I think the way that the portal is designed, I think it makes it an excellent game to give to someone who is having their first gaming experience playing a first-person shooter. Because, like I said, it's slow-paced. You have plenty of time to get used to just moving around, firing, and nothing is leaping out of the wall to kill you. So, this is another one of the reasons why I love Portal 2. Because I was able to have a great gaming experience with my brother, which is something that I normally can't do because he's just simply either not interested in gaming or he's unable to play because it's just too hard for him and he loses interest very quickly. But he did play through the entire Portal 2 campaign. Honestly, I could not tell you what he thought of it because that's just how he is. You have to guess at what he actually likes and what he doesn't like, because he'll never tell you directly. You know, I can ask him, well, what did you think of Portal 2? And he'll give some vague answer that to him it means something, but to me it means nothing because there are some times where I don't understand what he is saying, and you know that does cause a point of frustration. But I'm very pleased that Portal 2 gave this opportunity for us to have some time together and have a great gaming experience. And once again, thank you very much for listening to this listener's commentary of the Incomparables Portal and Portal 2 episode.